Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. It's Monday again. There's so much going on. I was watching the Queen's funeral for a long time. I had some comments on that. But I was looking over notes. I mean, I take notes all the time. I was just looking over, and I suddenly realized that, I'll talk about this more in detail when I find out more about it. But the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, I'm trying to find an article forecast when it's going to run out, because the reason your gas prices are low right now is because Brandon is draining our Strategic Petroleum Reserve. That's basically ours. That's ours for emergencies, right? So he's using our tax money to lower his, you know, oil prices so that he can look better for the midterms. So people are going to vote for him based on his, you know, stealing our petroleum reserve. And of course, the geldings aren't reporting this. They're not saying anything about it. They should. They should say every day, Brandon has lowered the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to buy the election. However, it's going to cost so much to get it back, and we don't have much right now. So I had a chart. Doing stuff here, just fooling around, trying to arrange my desk. I was still doing Facebook and texting and, you know, working with stuff until about 2 minutes before showtime. It's like, oh, you started to do. I'm getting so casual about this. One day I'm going to do some horrendous mistake. I mean, I hope not, but, you know, that's always the potential here, because I'm getting really comfortable doing this, which is good and maybe not good. All right, so I'm looking at the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Back in 19, I think it was 84, interesting year, it was really low. It was a little over 250, I guess that would be million barrels. Okay, 1,000. So it says 1,000, so you had 1,000 of that, so that would be 250 million barrels. That, back in 84. 1,000, it was about 550 million barrels, and I think the high point was, well, actually, it looks like it was 2010 was the high point, almost 750 million barrels. I'm trying to think why 2010. That would have been the Bush administration. That's kind of interesting. Trump says he bought a bunch, but I'm wondering why that is. Anyway, of course, it drops, you know, 2020 takes a nosedive, right? And it's heading down fast. So it's below 500 million barrels. And so it's the lowest it's been since 84, 85, something like that. So it's bad. It's really bad. And I don't even know when this thing took place. We're going to do some more look at this. And of course it was, we had it even all the times that we were importing vast amounts of oil. So I'll take a look at this as time goes on. I'm going to get rid of it now. I'll look more into this because there's a lot to it. But I'll probably do a whole show on to our Strategic Petroleum Reserve and why are we dealing with this kind of stuff. All right. So we've got an interesting day. I've moved things around a little bit. I'm starting at 7. And that's to be consistent with our other days of the week, Tuesday and Wednesday. And I'm trying to be consistent. I'm also trying to get the best reporters possible. And sometimes that means doing a little rearranging of showtime. So Heather Strickland, our rebel, who wrote the Rebel Keto book, which is coming out next month, is going to be a little bit busy to do a show for now. So hopefully we'll get her back. I don't know. You know, maybe after the book's out, we'll see. But I'd love to have her report because we had fun the couple times she was on. And so ideally Mondays, we'd have Jonathan Mosley, our legal reporter, Dorothy Diane, our sex and sensuality reporter, and Heather Strickland, our rebel reporter. That's my perfect Monday. But there's no room for guests, you know, and I'm running out of guest hours. So I mean, there's good and bad and everything. And of course, people take weeks off. So right now we're going to go with Monday. The first thing is me. And of course, this is the time we traditionally had local reporters, although I don't see anybody who's coming up local right now. I don't do a lot of local just because everybody else does around here. There's plenty of local reporting. So if you want local reporting, you've got local newspapers, you've got websites, you've got TV stations, you've got local radio stations, you've got tons of local information. So I try to do things that no one else reports on. And that would be, let me go through my list here. First thing that comes up, of course, we're in the middle of the Queen's funeral. And I got to see the service. It was very strange. And I know a lot of folks have, some people have no opinion of the Queen. You're Americans, you can't have an opinion of the Queen. But, you know, if you look at our founding, the people that came here that started, you know, the United States of America came from mostly Britain. You know, white guys from Britain are the ones that broke away from the British monarchy and said, no, you know, So, I mean, I'm interested in the British monarchy. It sort of fascinates me that in 2022, the British still consider themselves subjects and not citizens, that the only sovereign is the monarch and that everybody else is subordinate and pledges allegiance to the rule of the king. I mean, even this day and age. Yes, there's parliament. Yes, there's a prime minister. But, you know, words mean things. And so they're all upset. But it was, I'm watching the funeral. They didn't mention her hardly at all, if at all, other to say she was God's humble servant and, you know, and will be welcomed in heaven. And that's well and good. That makes sense. But they never talked about her life. They never talked about anything about her. Now, granted, all kinds of other shows have. But it was fascinating that it reminded me of very much my days in Australia when I was in, in school in Melbourne. It was a religious, it was Christian school. So we had the Bible class. We had a weekly church service, and it was almost identical to what the Queen did. It's the same recitation. You know, you basically sang the same hymns. You know, you heard the same sermon. You know, it was just this endless repetition of exactly the same thing, and the Lord's Prayer, and you said that, and we said that every morning, and it's almost like this rote, mechanical, very automated kind of service. And in the Church of England is, you know, Anglican, which is like Episcopalian, which is, you know, one step below Catholic, which is close enough to Catholic, so close to Catholic, I'm surprised they even had the Reformation when Henry VIII broke away so he could get divorced, which he did, but he still kept almost everything that was Catholic and called it Protestant. And so I'm sure I'm upsetting a whole lot of Christians, but that's okay. That's kind of what we do here. But it was fascinating to watch this. It was fascinating to see just how much they talked about Jesus and God, and which is fine. It's a church service. It makes sense. But to the exclusion of the Queen. That was the part that was so fascinating to me. Piers Morgan, who was reporting, I was watching Fox News, picked up on something that I sort of heard as I'm working. But he says the Archbishop of Canterbury actually says something really profound. So Piers Morgan pointed out that the Archbishop said that if you live lives of service, you're going to be remembered. If you live lives to accumulate power, you'll be forgotten. And that has a big impact on what's going on here in our own country now, that the coup, the illegal government presently occupying the White House, the resident in the White House, one Joseph R. Biden. I wonder what the R stands for. Probably for hopefully retiring. But anyway, but they seek power. You know, the election was stolen to seek power. All the folks in Congress, the deep state, the gelding Republicans, the GOP, the Marxist Democrats, they all seek power. Not one of them has an interest in doing what's right for this country because they're doing everything wrong. The Marxists are doing it, and the geldings are letting them. So it's either seeking of power or snuggling up to power or trying not to be affected by power, but on they go. On they go in this merry dance. And there are a few things standing in their way. You know, one is Donald Trump, and hopefully another one will be us, you know, at Action Radio, where we change the laws. We do not let them operate the way they've been operating. We, the people, you know, in hopefully the millions, and it's going to take millions, trust me, it's going to take millions, millions of people, and it's very peaceful. You don't have to do anything radical or crazy. Just send in the bill. Send in the bill links to the laws that you choose to be governed by. I mean, it literally is that simple. And the more people that send in the bill links to media and government of the laws that they choose to be governed by, they consent to be governed by, the closer we'll get to actually being governed by those laws. Because the implication is if the politicians don't vote for them, then we're not going to vote for them in the next election. I mean, that's how you change things. You send bills in and say, this is the bill. This is how we want to be governed. And when you send that bill in, when they churn out something else that's completely different, you say, well, wait a minute. You didn't get it right. You know, so you can't do that if you don't have a standard to start with. So one of the big things about citizen legislation is we start from a position of strength. We say, this is the bill that we consent to be governed by. And when they turn out something completely different, they say, well, no, you got it wrong. No, that doesn't count. That is not the bill that we asked for. See, nowadays we have no such standard. You know, if you say, I'll take a perfect example. Our bill, the big one, you know, the constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. Well, that might go to Congress and they'll come up with an amendment guaranteed not to pass. Congress shall not have the power to borrow money except, you know, war, declared war, national emergency, anything we choose, a budget crisis, you know, and they'll give you a list of qualifications. Well, I said, that's not the bill. The whole point of our bill is that there are no exceptions. You save for your emergencies. If you don't, then you've got to cut spending somewhere else. You have to figure something else out. You have to do it without borrowing money because we don't want you to borrow money anymore. But if they come back with all these exceptions and say, well, we've studied this, we've analyzed it, we put this through the Congressional Research Service, we've had constitutional scholars take a look, the Supreme Court has said that you can't, you know, stop Congress from borrowing money, which of course is nonsense, but they might do that. And we can say, nope, that's all wrong. We've got the bill right here. This is what it looks like. Anything else is unacceptable. Or maybe, you know, in terms of that one, there are some things I can see. We'll see what they come up with. But the point is, though, that the bills that we write are designed to pass as is. You know, and it may sound arrogant, but that's, you know, tell me where I'm wrong. I mean, I'll fix the bills. I fix bills all the time. I've been amending a couple of them to make them clear, our vaccine product liability bill and some of the other, the censorship bill. So they're as clear as possible, as easy to understand, as straightforward. I mean, the principles haven't changed, but some of the things in the bill have. And so that makes a difference. Let me check I forgot to type in our live chat, you know, good morning, because it's Monday. You know, so I should put a what's on your mind on our live chat, just in case someone wants to type in. That's worldwide, by the way. So we have live chat. We have a Skype line. I just checked the line before the show. It doesn't look like anybody has decided to comment on that. So let's go quickly. It's fun reaching around my microphone. I could shut the show off at any time. Your mind. Yep. All right. So that's done. If anybody wants to type in a message. If you don't want to call, you can always type in. You can type in right from your phone anywhere in the world. You know, kind of cool, huh? Especially if you have phone dictation, you could probably dictate right into it. It's almost like talking to me, except that's a longer process. All right, so that's what's happening as far as the nuts and bolts are going. There's just, like I say, tons of stuff happening. This is a little controversial, but I'm going to raise it anyway because that's kind of what we do. My thought as I woke up this morning at 5 or 4 o'clock, maybe it's closer to 4 o'clock, is whether the Queen had COVID shots or not. And we're going to talk about this Thursday, and folks are probably saying, oh, Greg, how could you be so sacrilegious on the day of the Queen's funeral? How can you ask if she had COVID shots or not? And the simple answer is because I'm curious, you know, and I'm not a British subject. You know, I was, as a Canadian, a member of the Commonwealth, but I'm an American. And so I am not part of the British Commonwealth. And so I, as much as I respect it and remember my, you know, my origins as a Canadian, quite frankly, I'm going to ask. Because I found it interesting that she's had 3 shots and now she has passed on. After she had her 3 shots, I guess in 2021, her health declined precipitously over the course of a year, and now she's gone. Prince Philip, who was older, he was 99 when he died. He died 3 months after his COVID shot. And the article says, well, from unrelated causes. Really? that dog don't hunt. Okay, so it's quite fascinating that I don't know if you autopsy a queen. I mean, I don't even know if I can ask that. But you figure the doctors that were looking after her during her lifetime would have looked at everything, unless of course they were co-opted by the British health system, in which case they would have had to follow the dictates of Dr. Fascist and some of the other people, and might have missed this little tidbit that giving COVID shots to the Queen was probably not a good idea, especially since she got COVID after getting the COVID shot, didn't have it before she got the COVID shot, and has now passed on. I find that interesting. So I found I looked through a bunch of articles trying to find the best one to cover this, and Marca, M-A-R-C-A, it's the Spanish daily. They seem to have done a good job here, so they have UK news. They have worldwide news, by the way. This is a worldwide news service that comes out of Spain. I increasingly find that the international press is much more willing to print articles, controversial, truthful, and otherwise interesting compared to our own basically Marxist lapdog news service that serves at the pleasure of the Democrat Party. So the headline is Queen Elizabeth COVID. How many doses did she receive? No, excuse me. She tested positive over the weekend. Okay, so over the weekend was a little bit ago. This was written February 21st. And so so 7 months ago? Yeah. Anyway, so when she was in better health, but still, you know, I mean, it's COVID shots, right? We know what COVID shots do. So I'm going to ask our doctors panel on Thursday about this. Anyway, it says it was announced on Sunday, articles written by Sam, S-A-M is what it looks like. It was announced on Sunday, and that would have been February 2nd of 2022. No, February 21st of 2022, excuse me. They do the numbers a little differently, so I had to interpret slightly. Article says it was announced on Sunday that Queen Elizabeth II has tested positive for COVID-19 and has some cold-like symptoms. She is believed to be, this probably means flu, right? She is believed to be feeling generally well, but there is a concern given that she is 95 years old. So this was, in 2022. So I guess she just turned 96 recently. Anyway, so given that she's 95 years old and therefore in the vulnerable persons category, Queen Elizabeth, slow down, Greg. It's Monday. I'll get this right. Queen Elizabeth II is vaccinated. So her doctors are confident that she'll be able to overcome this bout of coronavirus with some rest. Wait a minute. So she's vaccinated, then she got COVID? Doesn't that strike anybody as like, you know, kind of a weird coincidence that the people that get the jab are the ones most likely to get COVID? Well, if the COVID shot gives you COVID, what else does it give you? It's not that big of a jump to associate the fact that a COVID shot that gives you the very thing it's trying to prevent would also give you a whole bunch more stuff, as we know in great detail. I'm just sort of speculating just to kind of make sense of this article. The quote is, Her Majesty is experiencing mild cold-like symptoms, but expects to continue light duties at Windsor over the coming week. And that's a statement from the royal family. She will continue to receive medical attention and will follow all the appropriate guidelines. Well, I think the appropriate guidelines are the ones that are killing people. Quite frankly, that's not appropriate, but that's what I see. Then it says, how many doses of COVID, of the COVID-19 vaccine has the Queen had? And then it answers it, it is believed that Queen Elizabeth II has had 3 doses of a COVID-19 vaccine. And now she's gone. Coincidence? You know, causality? They say you can't prove causality. No, but I can be highly suspicious of the fact that she had 3 doses of a COVID vaccine and now she's gone. Okay? And I had one of my Facebook friends says, you can't say that. That's silly. That's crazy. You know, yeah, I can say that. And it makes perfect sense. I don't remember her having health problems before she had the COVID shots. Same thing with Eric Clapton. Same thing with a lot of people, a lot of public figures. Eric Clapton is interesting because he refuses to do concerts where they limit people to only those who have had the COVID shot because he thinks it's such an evil thing right now. Back to the article. She received her first dose in January of 2021, along with the Duke of Edinburgh, who later died a few months later due to unrelated health issues. Oh, give me a break. So listen to this again. She received her first dose in January of 2021, along with the Duke of Edinburgh, that's Prince Philip, who later died a few months later due to unrelated health issues. Well, how do you know they're unrelated? You guys making a diagnosis without any evidence? Yeah, that'd be crazy. That'd be like saying, you know, someone had a massive heart attack and died 3 months later of unrelated causes. Oh, please, give me a break. This is crazy. All right. So, and this is even though she could have skipped the queue to get her first dose of the vaccine, the Queen waited for her age group's turn. Well, that's probably what kept her alive another year. Anyway, it says since then, they have to line up for everything, including medical care. It says since then, it is understood that she has had 2 more doses of the vaccine, the original second dose, and then a winter booster a few months ago. There you go. It's the booster, you know, and of course, then she had greatly scaled back her jubilee, you know, all her appearances. And has anybody made the connection that she didn't seem to have any problems before the COVID shot, but after the COVID shot, she immediately suffered massive reductions in duty, appearances, and everything else, and now she's gone. Oh, coincidence? You tell me. Anyway, has the Queen had COVID-19 already? Queen Elizabeth II is not believed to have tested positive for COVID-19 before this week's positive test. In other words, she had no COVID until she took the COVID jab. Oh, it's just a coincidence. Let's see if I can get you more coincidences. This, then, is a new challenge for the royal doctors with Professor Sir Hugh Thomas. Head of the medical household and physician to the Queen. Expected to be in charge of her care these coming days, yes. Well, Hugh Thomas, you probably gave her the jab, and now she's gone. So, Hugh Thomas, you may have a few things to answer for. If the British public gets wind that Hugh Thomas gave the Queen 3 jabs, and now she's gone, that could cause a little disconcerting among the populace, would you think, possibly? I certainly do. This is Craig Pangus for the BBC. Yeah, right. Wouldn't that be funny? Anyway, we interrupt this program to return to Action Radio. Joking about that this morning. We interrupt the Queen's funeral to get back to Action Radio. Anyway, to aid in her recovery, she should be given some recently approved antiviral drugs, which reduce the risk of vulnerable people being hospitalized while testing positive for COVID-19. Oh, boy, good thing she didn't get hospitalized. She really would have been in trouble. All right. So that's that article. I find it fascinating. Say what you will, you know, okay, take me on, I don't care, 215-383-3832 or live chat. I'm surprised Britain isn't, we get a lot of British listeners, I'm surprised they haven't, you know, live chatted and either infuriated or saying, oh, that's interesting, maybe we should look into that. All right, let's get to, I've got more things here, I'm going to kind of skip them because I want to talk about a main topic, and I can always come back. Oh, I have to mention this, I'm sorry, one more thing before we get to ongoing investigations. Now, somebody, William F. Buckley, Jr., you should talk about things in this rather snooty way. And say, yeah, so that's the next thing we have to talk about is ongoing investigations. Anyway, I think we're being copied here. It seems to me a coincidence, a very interesting coincidence, that I did a big show on the Trump electors. I've talked for 2 years about the Trump electors. I have said all along that the key to overturning the coup is the Trump electors, and now all of a sudden everybody's talking about the Trump electors. That's fascinating. Tucker Carlson did it last week. Mark Levin did it last night on Life, Liberty, and Levin on Fox News. He opened his show with the Trump electors, explaining all about Pennsylvania's Trump electors. There are 7 battleground states that have put forward Trump electors. And one thing that scares the coup more than anything else for the Trump electors, because they're the ones that can kick Brandon out of office. And they just don't seem to go away. That's why I did that show last week on those pesky Trump electors. Just won't go away. And so it's fascinating now that those are coming back in the news, because the Brandon insurrection, in order to try and get rid of the Trump electors, is labeling them fake electors. They want them arrested, suppressed, and basically put in a gulag like the D.C. jail that's holding January 6th Trump selfie takers who are political prisoners of the deep state in the D.C. gulag. Maybe we should start calling it the D.C. gulag. Probably somebody else has. Anyway, I find it fascinating that Mark Levin did a big thing on that. Look for more information and reports on the Trump electors, because those are the key to overturning Brandon, because they're the ones who can do it. Because if the states, you know, which they should have done 2 years ago, decertify the Brandon electors for vote fraud, because there are millions of mail-in ballots that can't be certified. There's ample evidence of vote fraud. I mean, Mike Lindell just had a huge special on Frank's speech last night, documenting again all the vote fraud. There's so much vote fraud, and there's so much documentation of the vote fraud, you know, it's unmistakable. And besides, who ever thought that Brandon, who's never done well in a national election anyway, could suddenly beat one of the most popular presidents we've ever had? Intuitively, on a basic level of logic, that's irrational. Okay, so to think that Brandon, who was one of the least popular people when he was cogent, you know, when he could think, when he was lucid, you know, to think that the person who was an idiot when he had all his faculties and never got anywhere in the national elections at all, ran for president 3 times, lost so badly he withdrew almost immediately, could suddenly beat Trump? That's not even remotely rational. And yet, there's only 2 reasons to believe that. 1, you're an idiot and you believe anything. And 2, you're lying through your teeth. You know he didn't win, but you want his agenda. You know, you want America destroyed rather than you want America to be a great country. And it's just that simple. You either want America to be great or you want America to suck. And if you want America to suck, you support Brandon. If you want America to be great, you support Trump. I mean, it's pretty clear cut. Anyway, let me play a couple things real quickly here, and then we'll get on to our main topic. The fascination that I see with the ongoing investigation. It's like you can't touch me. I said ongoing investigation. Nah, 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 nah. It's like some kid's game. You know, you're it, but you're not. You know, whatever. There's a word for, you know, kids play things and you can't touch them. But no, can't touch me. You know, I'm whatever. You know, I'm immune. I'm in a zone or whatever kids call it. It's like, you know, ongoing investigation, you know, can't touch me. Doesn't exactly work that way. Anyway, be right back. Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements. And we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now, as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's GRAITH care.com. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy.
Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com.
Joe Biden's Dark Winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country. Action Radio. Dangerously cool.
This is what happens when I turn my microphone on too early. I was blowing dust off my mouse, hoping to make it work a little better, track a little better, but a little inside stuff here. Okay, so ongoing investigation. What exactly is an ongoing investigation? I mean, the words itself, you would think, would give you a clue. It says that obviously there's an investigation of law enforcement, we assume, or somebody, but, you know, and it's ongoing. Okay, that's good. So it's ongoing. So you got this ongoing investigation. And somehow that's supposed to mean that you can't ask a question about it. And I'm thinking to myself, well, wait a minute. This is a government investigation. This is a law enforcement investigation. Why can't I ask questions about it? Why can't I find out if they're investigating what they're supposed to investigate? And why can't I find out if they're not investigating things, you know, they're investigating things that they shouldn't, and they're not investigating things that they should? Well, how can I find out if we don't look into what's going on during an ongoing investigation? I mean, Congress has the same right. So does media. How do you know if they're investigating what they should be investigating unless they're open to questions during an ongoing investigation? I mean, the best place to change an ongoing investigation is when it's ongoing. When it's over, it's too late. You know, the books are closed. They've certified, signed off, and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, unless they don't want you to touch their investigations, you know, until they're completely closed. So why can't you ask? Now, does that mean we reveal all the evidence? Does that mean we reveal all the people? Does that mean that they say all the people they want to talk to so they can skip town and leave the country and go to some place where there's a non-extradition treaty? No, of course not. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying, though, is that the general principles of investigation have to be able to be known. All right. So we have to know whether, for example, the FBI is involved in treason and overthrowing the government and had operatives January 6th. We have to know that. Do we have to know who they are? Well, yeah, eventually, you know. But the fact is that the FBI has to be able to declare whether they're traitors or not. They have to be able to declare, you know, whether they had operatives January 6th to get people in there. They have to be able to declare if they're intimidating people around the country and doing things on the bidding of the Brandon insurrection, an illegal coup, or whether they're actually operating lawfully and constitutionally. And the fact that they say they're in an ongoing investigation just doesn't cut it. That's not good enough. That's unacceptable. It is unacceptable when that woman who was with the FBI, deputy director of some special agency, they're not agents anymore, they're special agents. They're special. Okay, so the FBI is special. So I don't care how special they think they are. They still are subject to oversight by Congress. They are subject to questions from the press. They are subject to freedom of information requests. And no, they don't have to reveal absolutely everything about every shred of evidence, you know, so that the people they're investigating can, like I say, skip town, you know, rig a defense earlier or do things like that. But we have to know the areas. We have to know if they're investigating the Russia hoax. We have to know if they know that the FISA judges are, you know, have been lied to, you know, by them. You know, there are things that we need to know. We need to know, you know, where's Hunter Biden? It's not so much Hunter Biden's laptop. Where's Hunter Biden? you know, why isn't he being investigated? We have to know why there are two standards of justice, one for Hillary and one for Trump. We have to know these things, and they are subject to investigation. Here's the real thing. To me, as soon as you say ongoing investigation, I'm thinking cover up. Okay, because you're saying that because you don't want questions. Now, those questions may be embarrassing. They may reveal crimes. They may do all kinds of different things, or somewhere in between. But when that person was asked by Ted Cruz, was anybody from the FBI involved in the January 6th, you know, let's call it what we call it, the Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in? And she says, I can't answer. Well, that goes to sources and methods. That's part of an ongoing investigation. Oh, really? What she's really saying is, I can't answer because she should have taken the Fifth. Right. She should have said, I can't answer on the grounds that it might self-incriminate me. Oh, well, that's what's going on. See, that's a different thing. That would have been the honorable and lawful thing to do, but they don't want to do that. They don't want to say that because now you know they're guilty, right? Even though the whole point of taking the Fifth Amendment is so that you don't incriminate yourself. The state still has to prove you guilty, but of course we all think you're guilty. Nothing's perfect, right? And so what she says is, I can't tell you. I can't answer that question. Now, why would she say, I can't answer that question? Because this is an ongoing investigation. Because to answer the question of treason by the FBI and the January 6th insurrection to suppress, you know, the truth and the Trump voters and cancel the January 6th electoral challenges that Levin talked about last night with the alternate set of Trump electors, the whole purpose of that is to overthrow the government while accusing, you know, everybody else of overthrowing the government. Well, the Trump supporters weren't overthrowing. They were supporting the government and the constitutional challenge. That's not overthrowing it. Only people who are overthrowing a government are going to accuse other people of overthrowing the government who are trying to save it. So that's what's going on. Anyway, so the choice is, if you're an FBI person and you know, and I believe she knew, that there are FBI operatives like Ray Epps, like the guy with the bullhorn, like the Capitol Hill police who are working on behalf of the FBI in the coup, opening the doors to the Capitol saying, come on down, like the Price is Right, this Capitol is yours. It's time for you to walk in and take selfies with our statues. You know, I think they all knew that, but they can't say that. Right? Because if she says, yes, we were involved in the coup, then she's basically admitted to treason, to overthrowing the government, admitted to insurrection, admitted to everything that should get her a lifetime in prison. Okay. If she says, no, we're not involved in that at all, well, then she's up for perjury charges when it proves that, of course, she is. Okay. So none of these people, they can't say they are involved because that's treason. They can't say they're not involved because that's perjury. So they say they can't answer the question. Ongoing investigation. And I'm saying ongoing investigation isn't good enough. That is not an excuse. That is not a get-out-of-jail-free card. That is not a get-out-of-investigation-free card. That is not a, you know, I don't have to answer this question, you know, response. It simply should not be valid. And when in Congress somebody's going to have the cojones to get up and say, that's not good enough. You do have to answer the question. You are subject to oversight by this congressional committee and me, and you don't have to reveal exactly every name and every absolute strategy, but you have to tell us what you're looking into. And you have to tell us what you're not looking into, and you have to tell us why. And that's what they should do, but they don't, because they're geldings. Geldings let the Marxists do what they want. So I found a few articles on this that I thought were interesting, most of which were written before the coup and before the United States lost its soul, basically before Obama. And this was from December 10th of 2008. So this would have been the end of the Bush administration. I'm guessing Obama was 2000. Was he 2008 or was that Bush? I'm getting my time confused. This would have been the beginning of the Obama administration. December 10th, 2000. Yeah, this would have been election year. So this has been right after the election, 2008. Okay, good. He started 2009. Sorry to think out loud right on the air with live radio, but that's kind of how I do it. Michael Shearer, S-C-H-E-R-E-R, December 10th, 2008, the, quote, ongoing investigation, unquote, thing. He says, Mark M. Binder, now you may not know these names, but the names aren't important because exactly the same thing's going on today. Mark M. Binder has beaten me to the punch on this one, but I still think it worthwhile to take a look back at the well-worn Washington practice of declining to comment because of a ongoing investigation. The most famous ongoing investigation dodge in recent memory, of course, was the White House's concerted attempt from President Bush down to spokesman John McClellan, don't remember him at all, to avoid talking about the whole Valerie Plame mess. I don't know who she is either. But again, the names aren't important, but the fact that they still claim ongoing investigation is common to both geldings and Marxists in the Congress and in the White House and wherever else they may be. Many liberal the article says many liberal critics, of course, found this dodge outrageous at the time. Reporters did too, but of course they didn't do anything about it. They didn't advocate a change in the law. That's where Action Radio comes in, but Action Radio did not exist in 2008 because they hadn't thought of it yet. All right. Article says, then there was a raft of Jack Abramoff, another name I'm not familiar with, but it sounds vaguely familiar, related declinations. That's a good declinations to comment. See, I guess they knew words back in 2008, right? Jack Abramoff related declinations to comment owing to, quote, ongoing investigations. Kevin Ring, for example, Bob Ney for another. Then there was Alaska Senator Ted Stevens, who is no longer with us, open investigation dodge. Even Gray Condit got on this bandwagon back during the Chandra Levy investigation. I remember her, but I forgot exactly what the issue was. Anyway, it says, give me Google Nexus and a couple more hours, and I could come up with dozens of more examples. So this question is, why is Barack Obama declining to comment because of an ongoing investigation? He repeated the dodge here and here, and of course you can link to wherever he said here and here. At his press conference yesterday, U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald said that everyone who knows anything should come forward. He'd give no hints of a need for secrecy. There's a lot to be said for exposing this to the sunlight. Of course, that's the whole idea. The whole idea of freedom of information, the whole idea of oversight, the whole idea of looking into what your government's doing is so that you know what your government's doing. Okay, that's the point. We have to know what they're doing. And if they can claim ongoing investigation, then we can't find out what they're doing. And if we can't find out what they're doing, how can we control them? I mean, that's the whole point. So this is why they say ongoing investigation, because they don't want to be controlled. They don't want people to know what they're doing, least of all the intelligence committees, or lack thereof, and the intelligence organizations that do all kinds of things. And they don't want anybody to know what they're doing, because they're intelligent. And what they do is in secret for our protection. Yeah, right. Yeah, secret is when they took all the laws that were and technologies that were designed to spy on other people, like terrorists in other countries, and they turned them on U.S. citizens. Why not? They could, right? See? But you can't find out that because those are ongoing investigations. Anyway, one day later, okay, fine. So it goes on to the things. Here's a name I recognize. This is update. I'll give you one more paragraph. Update one day later. Obama has fixed this problem. At his press conference Thursday, he announced that, he actually had press conferences, Obama did. Okay. I still think he lied during most of them, but at least he had the press conferences. He said, the article says, at his press conference Thursday, he announced that he has requested a report of all of his staff's contacts with Blagojevich. Yeah, we know that name is the Illinois governor, if I remember. Blago, baby, and his people, which he suggested would be released publicly. So notice he suggested, you know, he has announced that he requested a report. It doesn't mean he got a report. It doesn't mean he actually released anything publicly. He added, you know, what I am absolutely certain about is that our office had no involvement in any deal making around my Senate seat. That I'm absolutely certain of. And that would be a violation of everything that this campaign has been about. And that's not how we do business. Okay, right. that's an interesting denial. It's like that would be not something we do. It's not saying he didn't do it exactly, but anyway, I'll worry about that later. Point being that this ongoing, and this may be a dry topic for all of you. I'm not sure. Sometimes that, you know, and I'll do this too. Some of the things that I think a lot of people consider dry, dull, boring. It's not as sexy as flying illegal aliens into Martha's Vineyard because you can go, ha 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 ha, isn't that great? You know, illegal aliens are in Martha's Vineyard. All the white people get upset and they ship them off to military camps because we can't have that in Martha's Vineyard, right? You know, the land of diversity, you know, basically the white, rich, liberal. You know, if you want a place of no diversity whatsoever, except for the Obamas, and that's skin color only, it's not wealth or status or elitism or globalism. The only difference between the Obamas and the other folks is a slight shade of skin color but everything else is the same. So they're definitely Martha's Vineyard kind of people, all right? Anyway, that's why they're tolerated there, by the way. that's another story too. All right. So here's one too. Monday, June 24th, 2019, Julie Bendorf. And this is from Municipal Minute. It's their website. This is an Illinois website. It says, ongoing investigation does not provide blanket exemption to FOIA requests. And FOIA is saying the word FOIA, which stands for Freedom of Information. What does A stand for? Freedom of Information something. I'll ask Jonathan. He'll be on at the top of the hour. Anyway, the Illinois appellate courts don't often decide FOIA cases, so it's a Freedom of Information Act. There we go. Oh, I thought I was losing my mind then. So the Illinois appellate courts do not often decide Freedom of Information Act cases, so it's always an interesting read when they do. This is most of our FOIA posts that deal with PAC opinions. I'm not sure what PAC is, and we'll find out later. So again, June 24th, 2019, Julie Tappendorf said, in Kelly v. Village of Kenilworth, et al., 2019, an appellate court considered the appeal of a denial of a FOIA request for records relating to a 50-year-old investigation. Let me say that again, a 50 year-old investigation into the murder of a 21-year-old in her Kenilworth home. So here's somebody requesting, details of an investigation that's 50 years old. Did she get them? No, because it's still ongoing. Let's do this. Kelly filed various FOIA requests with the village, the state police, the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. Of course, that's run by Kim, what's her name? You know, the leftist Soros person that keeps tossing people out of jail for major crimes like murder. Anyway, alleged murder. Let me put it that way, just to be on the safe side. Anyway, Cook County State's Attorney's Office, Montgomery. Here we go. Various requests. Okay, in the village, the state police, the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, among other government entities seeking all records pertaining to the murder investigation. The village and other public bodies denied the request on the basis that the records were for law enforcement purposes and disclosure would interfere with an active or ongoing criminal investigation. 50 years old, right? Subsequently, Kelly filed a lawsuit against the village and other defendants. After the trial, court reviewed some of the requested records in camera. I guess that means they looked at them and recorded them. I don't know. The court, I'll ask Jonathan that too. The court ruled in favor of the village and other defendants, finding that disclosure could interfere with an ongoing investigation. Okay. This is kind of a theme here. On appeal, the appellate court first held that the village could assert an FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, exemption over the records held by the other defendants, including Cook County and the state police. Second, the appellate court held that the trial court correctly determined that there was an ongoing investigation into the murder for purposes of FOIA exemptions contained in 7-1-D, whatever that is. All right. Here's where it gets interesting, though. And this is a part of the article that now that she's got the background. It says, however, this is my favorite word in the English language, however, the appellate court expressed concerns about the trial court's application of a blanket exemption over the requested records relating to the ongoing investigation. The appellate court determined that Section 7-1-D requires a public body to redact and release. Redact and release. Is it like catch and release? We've got to catch and release the documents. Okay, redact and release. Redact is when they put black stuff all over the things you can't read, which can be most of the document. So redact and release that portion of the investigative records where the release would not interfere with an ongoing investigation or obstruct an ongoing criminal investigation. Okay. The appellate court did, however, acknowledge that the scope of the requested records was extensive and that the village and other defendants may have properly asserted the unduly burdensome exemption in response to the FOIA request. So that's it. So basically, it still is clear that they said was not a blanket exemption, but they still can exempt almost everything. So we've gone from everything can be exempted to almost everything. So we're making progress. We're actually, we're getting somewhere, and that's a good thing. All right. So let's go to my favorite place to investigate ongoing investigations. That would be Congress, where the Geldings and the Marxists, the Democrats and Republicans, basically work for the deep state against us. Here's the Mololamken Law Practice, M-O-L-O-L-A-M-K-E-N, as we always give credit where credit is due. This is their own corporate legal law firm newsletter, which says, what exactly does Congress have the authority to investigate? Well, kind of interesting. So I'm not sure. I don't see a date on this particular article coming from a company. It probably doesn't matter that much. But I imagine this is current since they haven't redacted it and declared that it's somehow under an ongoing investigation. It says, what exactly does Congress have the authority to investigate? And then they say, simply put, almost anything. Although the Constitution does not expressly authorize Congress to conduct investigations, Congress and the courts have long recognized that Congress has an inherent constitutional prerogative to conduct investigations. Well, of course, how do you legislate if you can't investigate? I mean, can you imagine us trying to write legislation after looking into it? That would be insane. So investigations are an integral part of legislation. If you have the power to legislate, you have the power to investigate. That's just me. Back to the article. In fact, the first congressional investigation occurred as early as 1792. I think it's before the Bill of Rights. Just after the Bill of Rights, 1789. It's interesting. So they got the freedom of the press and and the freedom of speech and then they started investigating. Pretty cool. All right. Anyway, 1792, when the House of Representatives convened a committee to investigate the defeat of General Arthur St. Clair in the Battle of Wabash in what was then known as the Northwest Territory and now known as Ohio. Of course, Canada has a Northwest Territory, which is a lot further north and a lot further west, and a lot colder, too, even than Ohio. And then it says Congress has the authority to conduct investigations, quote, in aid of its legislative function. That authority can extend to investigations for the purpose of deciding whether legislation is appropriate. Didn't I just say that? To information gathering on matters of national importance. Oh, yeah, like the Russia hoax. To oversight of federal departments, that would be the FBI, and executive agencies, that would be the Justice Department. As a result, a congressional committee has broad discretion regarding both the scope of its investigation and the relevance of the information it requests. Unless, and let me add here, it's part of an ongoing investigation. Okay, it doesn't say that, but that's me adding in it. And then it says, although congressional authority to investigate is broad, it is not. See, this is lawyer talk. Not unlimited is the same thing as saying it is limited. That's what we call a double negative. But lawyers use double negatives all the time because it uses two words instead of one, which makes them more impressive. Much like me using five times the amount of words Dennis Prager uses in a typical broadcast, making mine five times more valuable. Back to the article. Because Congress's authority to investigate is tied to its authority to legislate, limits on congressional investigations are necessarily linked to the limits on Congress's constitutional authority. For example, Congress has no general authority to investigate the purely private affair of an ordinary citizen. Well, if they don't, then the Justice Department doesn't either. You know, unless there's a reason to. You got to have, you know, probable cause, got to go before a judge, you know, get a search warrant, you know, define the places to be searched and the things to be seized. Okay, you got to do all that. Of course, they don't. This is fascinating. The doctrine of separation of powers also places limits on congressional authority to investigate. Congress cannot, under the guise of an investigation, usurp the power of another branch of government. It cannot investigate matters where the means of redress is purely judicial. This is where I'm going to start to question things. Nor can Congress investigate matters committed to the president's discretion. All right, so in other words, they're talking courts and the executive. For example, Congress could not undertake an investigation to determine an individual's entitlement to a pardon because the Constitution granted the pardon power to the president, not Congress. Okay, so you get the idea. So Congress can't bring criminal charges. It goes on to say, oh, here we go. If a congressional investigation uncovers evidence of criminal activity, however, Congress may refer the matter to the Department of Justice for investigation and potentially prosecution. Sometimes the DOJ investigation predates the congressional investigation. No matter which branch of government moves first to investigate, however, the end result is that a congressional investigation often will run parallel to a criminal investigation. This is interesting. As a result, evidence developed in a congressional investigation might be used by the DOJ in its criminal investigation or in a prosecution. Does it work the other way? Does it work the other way? Ultimately, nearly any matter can be anchored in some fashion to Congress's legislative authority. So there you go. So they can do a lot of good stuff, which makes sense. They should. Okay. Let's go to my dear Congressman here in the First District of Florida, Matt Gaetz, who put out his own article, press release here, talking about Congressman Matt Gaetz forces senior DOJ official into accidentally confirming ongoing Hunter Biden investigation. Okay, they confirmed the investigation, but he didn't confirm what the scope of it was because they said it was an ongoing investigation. So you want to hear a fascinating thing. I wish I had a video on this, but even if I did, I wouldn't be able to release it. It's probably copyright, you know. But anyway, July 28th, 2022, just a few months ago, press release, Washington, D.C. Let me get my Dateline music here. This would be kind of fun. So Washington, D.C. Let's find – here we go. And now Dateline, Washington, D.C. Hot at the presses, Matt Gaetz, July 28th, 2022. During today's House Judiciary Committee hearing, Assistant Attorney General for the Department of Justice's National Security Division, Matthew Olson, accidentally confirmed to U.S. Congressman Matt Gaetz, Florida 01, that the DOJ has an ongoing investigation into Hunter Biden's corrupt business dealings with foreign actors. This active investigation stemming from content found on Hunter Biden's laptop has not been previously confirmed by the DOJ. Assistant AG Olson referred to this ongoing investigation into Hunter Biden 8 times while refusing to answer simple questions about President Joe Biden's involvement. Okay. To Matt Gaetz makes a nice little quote. Let's get to what he really said. So they got a transcript of the dialogue. Now listen, this actually happened in a congressional hearing. This is where Matt Gaetz at his best. And I wish he'd do more of this and not some of the other stuff, but this is so just listen to this. So Gaetz and Olson. So Matt Gaetz is Congressman Matt Gaetz. Matthew Olson is the deputy, whatever DOJ person. Gaetz, is Hunter Biden a national security threat? Olson, that's not a question that would come up before me, Congressman. I'm the one laughing. Gaetz, you're the head of the National Security Division, so it seems sort of on the nose. Olson, it's not in my practice or experience to identify individuals and to label any individual, American citizen or any individual, as a national security threat. Yeah, but he's looking into all the January 6th people, the that are now in the D.C. gulag, right? Back to the article. Gates, not in my purview. We've heard that before. Well, you would certainly concede that if the adult offspring of the president of the United States or the vice president were compromised, that would be a national security threat, right? Olson, we speak through our filings in court and we speak through our actions in an open court. So, Gates, speak to this. Where's the laptop? Do you know where Hunter Biden's laptop is? Olson, again, I'm not going to talk about any potential ongoing investigation. Gates, just do you know where it is? Do you know where it is? Olson, I'm not going to talk about any ongoing investigation. See how often this comes up? This is great. Gates, you come here and you tell us you follow the facts and the law, but you can't even follow a laptop that you guys have had for 3 years. Olson, we follow the facts and the law, and we speak in open court about our case. Gates, yeah, but you aren't speaking about this. But you know who is speaking about it? The whistleblowers from the FBI who have gone to Senator Grassley and said that you guys purposefully take any information that is derogatory about Hunter Biden and you go and rat hole it, in other words, disappears forever and ever, so that you never have to speak about it in any circumstance. But the good news is you're not the only ones with that laptop. So Patrick Ho was convicted of bribing government officials in Africa, and he gave $1 million to Hunter Biden. Are you familiar with that? Olson, I'm not going to speak about any ongoing investigation. Is that an ongoing investigation? Patrick Ho bribe? That's from Gates. Olson, I can't. I'm not going to speak about any potential ongoing investigation. So not only don't speak about ongoing investigations, they speak about things that might be ongoing investigations, maybe, but they can't tell you. They're not going to actually confirm whether there is an ongoing investigation. But if it is an ongoing investigation, they're not going to speak about it. Even whether it is an ongoing investigation. Oh, this is Orwellian doublespeak at its best, all right? Now you understand the problem. The reason I'm going through this dialogue is so you understand the problem and how bad it is. It is so bad. It is so bad that these people think they can do anything if they say ongoing investigation. It's like their get-out-of-question-free card. I was trying to think of a way to put that. I think it's your get-out-of-question-free card. There we go. Gates then says, don't you see that degrades the country's belief in you guys when you have whistleblowers saying that you're purposely rat-holing this information, and then you come here and say you won't talk about it inside Hunter Biden's multi-billion-dollar deals for the Chinese energy company? That's Washington Post, Matt Viras. Chinese elite paid $31 million to Hunter and the Bidens. That's Peter Schweitzer, New York Post. Hunter Biden's business partner called Joe Biden the big guy in panic messages. Then Gates says, do you guys call Joe Biden the big guy at the Department of Justice? Such a great line, right? Olson, so I think it's important to understand why we don't speak about cases outside of the courtroom. Well, wait a minute. That's a whole problem right there. So the only place these people will talk is in a courtroom. Well, that's crazy because they don't operate in a courtroom all the time. They operate mostly outside of courtroom. Most of what they do is outside of court. So the only place where they think they can talk is in court, and court has its own rules. You've got a defense attorney. You've got a prosecuting attorney. You've got a judge. You've got a jury. Well, probably not a jury for a lot of these cases because they're administrative law judges. But the point is that court is one of the most restrictive places, and one of the places you can most easily challenge stuff. You can't ask open questions, and you get objections and all kinds of things. So anyway, and then Gates says, by the way, I already know why. Olson, if I may, sir, if I may answer the question, Gates, you know why you don't speak about it, because it's about Hunter Biden. You guys have no problem leaking about other stuff, right? Like you got no problem going out and tagging parents at school board meetings. Okay, you know what he's going to say, right? And then Olson says, I'm not going to talk about any ongoing investigation. And then he says, well, you know who else is talking? Tony Bobulinski. And then Olson says, again, we don't talk about ongoing investigations in settings such as this. What do you mean settings such as this? This is Congress. They don't have a choice. This is what, and the one thing Gates didn't say that he should have said was, you don't have a choice. You have to talk about this. We have oversight over you. We control your budget. You know, he should have said, what do you plan to do after government service this afternoon when you don't have your job anymore? That's what he should have said. And this is where Trump's going to be critical in 2024. Any of these people that go before Congress that don't fess up, don't tell the truth, don't talk about their investigations, not in terms of the exact names of people, and you got to protect people that are witnesses and things like that, but just to give the general idea of what they're investigating and what they're not, they should be fired immediately. We'll talk about Section 14, the Schedule F. That's another way of scheduling employees another time. Anyway, how many times he said that? He just kept saying, it's like saying I'm taking the fifth. You know, and in fact, that'd be another thing too. These people in Congress, they should say, anytime you say ongoing investigation, that's just code for I'm taking the fifth. Well, so I'm not taking the fifth. Okay, answer the question. Well, it's an ongoing investigation. So this could go back and forth indefinitely. All right, so there we go. Let's talk about another one here. Here's another FBI agent drops bomb about an ongoing investigation. And this is by the admin. I guess these are the folks that write Republican Daily. You believe this came out of Republican Daily? Published May 24th, 2022. FBI agent Curtis Hyde, H-E-I-D-E, or it could be Hyde, just revealed a whopper during his testimony at the trial of Michael Sussman on Tuesday. Michael Sussman, remember him? He's the one that should have gotten a whole bunch of time but didn't because I think he's a Democrat. Anyway, Hyde testified that he is currently facing an internal investigation, which is most likely ongoing, for withholding potentially exculpatory evidence, in other words, stuff that gets you free, from an application for a FISA, that's a foreign intelligence surveillance thing. That's the Russian judges warrant to surveil someone during their probe of Trump's 2016 campaign, which of course is domestic spying and therefore illegal. And he says that wasn't all. He also said that others who had been involved in the Trump-Russia probe were also being investigated, but he didn't say who they were or what positions they held at the Bureau. And he says, Heidi said the evidence in question was consensual recordings. That's Washington speak for we're spying on you and not telling you. They're calling it consensual recordings. Is that like consensual sex in Washington? Mm-hmm. I can only imagine what that means. This is one of the subjects. He did not reveal who was being surveilled. There are various consensual recordings, and the exculpatory information was not disclosed in the FISA court. This goes on and on. But the basic thing is this whole thing is the same thing we've heard before over and over and over and over again. They hide stuff, and they hide stuff behind this myth of the ongoing investigation. So then I got an editorial here that I found quite interesting. We're going to have Jonathan join us in a little bit, and we'll continue our legal discussion. This is from the Albuquerque Journal. This is Saturday, July 25th, again, 2020, so a couple of years ago. Editorial, Justices, Cops Can't Hide Behind Ongoing Investigation Label. So some people are actually doing something about this, and we might want to model this law from New Mexico because it sounds like a good thing. New Mexico's Inspection of Public Records Act, which is probably like the Freedom of Information Act, betcha, at the federal level, they're what they call the IPRA, I-P-R-A, the Inspection of Public Records Act makes clear the public is entitled to the greatest amount of information possible about its government and guarantees everyone access to public records. Florida has a sunshine law that's kind of similar to that, although they use it to publish the name, address, birthday, phone number, you know, email address and everything else about people once they register to vote. That is insane. If a credit card company revealed that much information, they'd be arrested for a data break or a data breach. But because the state of Florida does it, it's okay. Yeah, I have the bill to change that too. Excuse me. The law, commonly known as the IPRA, has become a key tool not only for journalists but for citizens, allowing them to access records such as police reports and 911 tapes, government contracts, and emails of public sector employees. Think about that. So in Washington, they say ongoing investigation. But in states with a sunshine law, like Florida, which does something similar, and in New Mexico, the Inspection of Public Records Act allows people to access records such as police reports, which are obviously part of an ongoing investigation, 911 tapes, which are obviously part of an ongoing investigation, government contracts, which may or may not be part of an ongoing investigation, but they govern the people that govern us, right? And emails of public sector employees. Okay, so in other words, if you're a public sector employee, if you want to do a secret email, do it from your personal account. But if you do it from your government account, you know, that's public record. So that's what happens when you email public officials too in Florida. They make a record of that as well. So don't email anything to a public official that you don't want everybody else to know. So don't make threats. Don't be stupid. Don't say nasty things. Don't say they sleep with fuzzy blue teddy bears. Don't do any of that stuff. Don't do it. Be very straightforward in all your communications with government officials if those things can be made public. Now, behind the scenes, you might joke that Nancy Pelosi sleeps with fuzzy blue teddy bears, but that's only for, you know, private conversations or my radio show. Back to the article. Its transparency is a key mechanism for keeping government accountable. It's true. This is from the Albuquerque Journal. All right. This is, but it is not without safeguards. Law enforcement records exempt from the Inspection of Public Records Act include those that, quote, reveal confidential sources, methods, information, or individuals accused but not charged with a crime. Okay, that's a good thing. Confidential sources, if they are revealed, they wouldn't be confidential anymore and they could be killed. So you don't have to reveal those names. Methods, well, the exact way that they investigate stuff, I don't need to know that. But I do need to know what they're investigating, what they're not investigating. that should be public knowledge. So methods, yeah, I can see keeping restrictions on that. Information or individuals accused but not charged with a crime. Absolutely. There's no reason to have those people as part of a public record, because if you're not charged with a crime, then, you know, then you're not in the process. And one of the biggest problems is people with false accusations, especially for things like child molestation or the false accusations of red flag laws so that spouses can have their partner's guns taken. You know, all these things, all these false accusations, or candidates for office, you know, get the sex accusation. You know, you can't do that. Well, public people are different. But the point is that you cannot release the names of people, you know, not charged with a crime, because that's not right, because they still have the due process. And part of the due process is you haven't been convicted yet. So you shouldn't be part of the public record. So all that makes sense. But given that there's still a ton of stuff they can reveal about ongoing investigations, and they don't, because they hide behind it. And here we go. And this is back to the article. Unfortunately, for many years, the New Mexico police departments, plural, have taken that a step too far, asserting police reports cannot be made available to an, and here's my favorite two words for this morning, ongoing investigation. That every time it's ongoing investigation, they always put in quotation marks. I find that interesting. And it says that's why a New Mexico Supreme Court ruling last week is so significant. It finally puts an end to its under investigation excuse while preserving the confidentiality of police sources and methods and uncharged individuals. So I think New Mexico has the perfect balance here. Jonathan's on the line. I'm going to let him listen just for a second here. It says the Albuquerque Journal, Santa Fe, New Mexican, Rio Grande Sun, and New Mexico Foundation for Open Government attempted to resolve the dispute in a 2005 settlement with the New Mexico Department of Public Safety, that would be the police, but police compliance was lacking from the outset. What a big, you know, effing surprise, okay? Many police departments continue to deny IPRA, that's the public records account stuff, requests for reports, citing, and one more time, ongoing investigation. While other cities said they weren't subject to the settlement and the agreement only applied to the Department of Public Safety. So here's where it gets good. The unanimous state Supreme Court ruling July 14th, which is Bastille Day for those that don't know French history. That's not in the article. That's me. I'm on a roll this morning. I must have had sleep last night. Anyway, Supreme Court ruling July 14th should put an end to that. The court ruled the IPRA, and that's the Inspection of Public Records Act, the IPRA does not create a blanket exception, allowing law enforcement agencies to withhold police records simply because of an ongoing criminal investigation. For anyone interested in keeping their law enforcement agencies responsible to the public that pays their salaries, it was Christmas in July. And there's more to it, but I want to get Jonathan on the line now. And so let me see, I just do some here just for fun. Give him a little welcome rocket blast here.
Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything.
So, Jonathan, I've been having way too much fun with this whole ongoing investigation thing for the last half hour, with Gates examples, with Albuquerque, with New Mexico, with some of the Fed stuff, and just the fact that every time they want to make an excuse, and we talked about this last week too, but I wanted to pursue it a little bit further. That whenever they want their, you know, I don't want to answer the question because it might be perjury or admitting treason, they say it's part of an ongoing investigation. I refuse to answer the question. And the geldings and the Marxists in Congress, they just stop right there. It's like, okay, well, all right, ongoing investigation. You know, we'll let you go. And they don't, and they shouldn't. Morons. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning. Yeah, no, that's really encouraging. I think the assassination of President Kennedy, isn't that still under investigation? I don't. Maybe they've closed the books on Abe Lincoln. I don't know, but
well, that is a secrecy.
You know, all,
I think there. Yeah, I think there's something different on that. Isn't that come under classified? I think they classified the results of that for 75 years, if I remember.
Well, so I'm not trying to be precise. I'm trying to be sarcastic.
Well, yeah, I know.
Give me a break here.
Well, I'm sorry, but even in that, I'm sorry, I'm in a serious mood. I should have known. I should have recognized your sarcasm. Yeah, well, but where did that all come from? Is there any laws or any provision, or is there any regulation? Is there anything written down anywhere? Or is this just a Washington thing they've just developed because it works?
Well, both. And by the way, you're coming coming through very soft. I get it's better if I put you on speaker, but then when I put you on people, everyone's complaining that when I put it on speaker, it warble, you know, it distorts thing. So we'll try.
Are you
our
on speaker
best
now?
I'm 20 miles south of the nation's capital, so therefore cell phone service is terrible. As my brother pointed out, if we were in Afghanistan, we'd probably have state-of-the-art, you know, top-quality cell phones paid for by the U.S. taxpayer. But here in the nation's capital, by the way, do you know that in Los Angeles, cell phone service is horrific? You know, even in the richer neighborhoods, it's like, you know, like we're just kind of pathetic.
Well, maybe they've run out of bandwidth. I mean, there's only so many cell phone channels and satellites. You know, maybe there's such a concentration. I find my internet, I do most of my best internet work at 4 in the morning because nobody's on. You know, my service is fast. You know, but after the show or the early evening, I'm playing guitar because there's no point. Yeah, I love playing guitar.
Right.
B,
so maybe they could.
Everybody's on the internet. They're all doing Facebooks. So that's what I don't do.
They could maybe take bandwidth from ABC, CBS, and NBC and put it to something useful.
That's a good idea.
So the thing is, I hope we'll do the best. But what happened is we should remember, of course, too, that now, you know, this is getting to be, you know, truly old people stuff. Back when the left when the left was all about question authority.
Yeah.
And
hey, I have one of those stickers. I want to get another
it's
one.
Now,
yeah.
But the trouble is that the left of today is too ignorant to even know that you're poking fun at them.
Yeah.
But all of these things, open government and everything like that, that was all part of the left wing or, you know, the liberal opening up of government. And it's a big thing. Of course, now they don't like it.
Because they are the government.
But the laws,
they switch roles.
That were created.
Yeah.
What's that?
Well, they switch roles. Now they become the government, so they want the power. They don't want to be questioned. The worst thing
well,
is, and they've
exactly,
also gone from
that,
liberal to
deep,
Marxists. Yeah, they're not liberals anymore. They're Marxists.
That's a deep
liberals
point,
were great.
Yeah.
I don't care about liberals. Liberals I can talk to. It's the Marxists. I mean, not even liberals can talk to Marxists. You know,
well, of course, the Marxists have replaced the liberals. That's why other people chastise me to stop using the word liberal, and I've admitted that they're right. They've taken over like Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Mm-hmm.
If people again, an old people's science fiction movie, in black and white with poor special effects. So today's people might not be into that.
Oh, the new one's
but
great.
In any event,
you should see Donald Sutherland scream in the more recent version of it.
Exactly.
He's scary as hell. Yeah. I should get that recording. And now announcing a member of our government.
Well, mostly though, Donald Sutherland's scream at the end of Invasion of the Body Snatchers is mostly silent, which is what makes it really scary.
Mm.
It's a visual.
I've forgotten.
Scream.
Okay.
So when he's become one of the. To spoil it for the audience, of course, it's when. It's when they're taking over everybody. The aliens are taking over everybody one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And Donald Sutherland has succumbed. So he's now on the alien side.
Yep.
And he points out that his former friends have not been converted. And so he screams at them. He points out to scream to turn all the aliens against the good guys.
That's like mask wearers. I mean, that's like the perfect metaphor for mask-wearing people, you know, especially in New York and the liberal places where they're all so scared of their own shadow that they would take anybody who wasn't wearing a mask and scream at them, you know. And
yeah.
I think you've hit upon something really important here. And they scream at them just like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. You're not one of us. You're an alien. You're a strange person. You're
that's
not conforming.
It.
How dare you? We need to kill you and put you in the gulag or make you wear a mask. I mean, it's the same thing. Great example, Jonathan.
You know, in all my years of bouncing around the conservative movement and politics, you know, I have, and trying to make sense of it, you know, like one may think that, that, you know, these are deep thoughts. No, it's like, you know, it's like the crying of a troubled mind saying, how could this be? How could these people be so insane? It's like, mm-hmm. so, you know, you stay awake at night trying to figure out what the hell is going on in our country. And and the left has this desperate, clawing, insecure need to belong.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think it's a psychological, I don't know if it's an illness so much as an underdeveloped immaturity.
What's
that,
a dependency?
You know,
And there's got to be a word for it. Has anybody done a psychological study of the need?
Oh, I'm sure they have.
Someone's
well,
talking about
enough,
recently.
I'm sure they have.
Oh, the guy on, I've got the recording of it. It's on Rumble. It's the guy that Tucker Carlson had, the Belgian psychologist, who was talking about mass formation psychosis. And he was talking about the need to belong. I had it on Facebook, but anybody can go to Rumble. Tucker Carlson, and I'll pull up right now. And I'll tell you exactly who it is. And then we can.
So signals that, uh-huh. that show I'm one of the group.
Yeah. And you're okay.
And the corresponding need to attack those who are not part of the group. I believe it's part of this psychological illness or underdevelopment that they cannot stand, whereas conservatives can stand on their own two feet, but they can't get along with each other, so they never get anything done. So we have the two extremes. Anyway, what were we talking about? So the invasion of the left, you know, the liberals, the Democratic Party. People, I mean, everybody, I assume, understands by now that, you know, if your grandparents were registered Democrats, this has nothing to do with that. The Democratic
right.
Party no longer exists. It's been completely subsumed by the body snatchers. First, the liberals. Now the out and out.
I can feel that. That is so good.
Oh, please.
Funny.
Now
yeah.
it's the out. Now it's the out and out, complete, total. It's a complete out-and-out total Marxist. And,
yep.
You know, the hippies of the 50s and 60s grew up to take over everything.
Yep.
And largely, as people have said, because conservatives want to do real things with their lives, they don't necessarily want to go into the government. And so it was relatively easy for the crazies to take over our country because you know, normal patriots and conservatives want to have normal lives. They don't want to be part of this nonsense. Yes, the leftists are like that. But originally, you know, the 60s liberals, who are only partly crazy compared to today's leftists, they were part of this big open government, question authority, transparency movement. And so all these laws, these Freedom of Information Act laws, obviously the government never bought, you know, never wanted that. You know, the police, like, you know, hey, we're above all you people. We're above the law. And so, but there are some phrases in the statutes that, you know, some exemptions. And of course, when they got this compromise, you know, because remember, Washington and the political class is all about pretending to do things but not actually doing them.
Yep.
So they did this big transparency move and then riddled the laws with so many exceptions that it didn't actually mean anything. And so there were ongoing, you know, investigations and various things like that. And
right.
So that the government can and always does give you the documents that don't mean anything, charge you an outrageous amount of money, and then hold back the things that actually would get them thrown in jail. Then, of course, what we've talked about on and on is that then it goes to the courts. And so somebody mm-hmm. just says, oh, ongoing investigation. And the thing is, you know, can't think of how to say this quickly, but you have to read the fine print of the rules.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, let's say you're playing soccer and you say, okay, it's really obvious the person who kicks the ball into the net, you know, wins a point. But then mm-hmm. you got to read the fine points. There's all these fine points that say, oh, but you know, unless we don't like this person or something like that, and then it doesn't count. And so the courts have all of these rules for how we assume the government is telling the truth, believe it or not. You know, it's a presumption of regularity. We assume that the government is right. You know, we assume that, you know, we're not going to get involved too deeply in questioning the executive branch in terms of it's a political question. It's across, you know, we're going to give deference to the other agencies of government. And all of these trapdoors and loopholes so that they don't actually decide whether anything, you know, is proper. They just rely upon all these loopholes, rig the game, so that by the time they get around to answering the question, you know, all the loopholes and tricks have already predetermined the outcome. The outcome is predetermined that we're not going to find anything wrong because we set up the rules to make sure we don't find anything wrong.
See, but that's what should be revealed. That's part of the stuff that even if they say ongoing investigation, you have to be able to look into that. As I made the point earlier, you have to be able to see, you know, that they're investigating the right stuff and they're not investigating the wrong stuff. And these exemptions here, this is the law enforcement, but I imagine this would work for the FBI. They said similar language. It says, this is from the Arizona Journal article I read earlier, their Inspection of Public Records Act is not without safeguards. Law enforcement records exempted include those that reveal confidential sources, methods, information or individuals accused but not charged with a crime. Well, that makes perfect sense. I went over each one of those individually. You have to have confidential sources or they won't be confidential and they could be killed. Methods? Yeah, do I need to know exactly which type of machine they use for which eavesdropping, which, you know, after they got their warrant, of course? No. I just need to know, you know, that they're looking into this area. I don't even know exactly who. Information or individuals accused but not charged with a crime. Well, that's due process. You can't reveal somebody's name until they're convicted, or at least on in a public trial, I would think. So that could, those exemptions make sense. But anything else about what the investigation is doing and the purpose of it, why isn't that open? Why can't, you know, whether it's a federal investigation or a state, why can't Congress or the media look into those things? That's the part I don't understand.
Well, they they should be able to, and there should be some, you know, but like I say, the rules are set up in such a way that if the agency, if the police, and of course this is back during the day when it's like, you know, we honored our police and we believed in them and things like that.
Yeah, that went with Waco.
And more about that
that's gone
in a minute. But the you know, if the government, if the police say that there is an ongoing investigation, the courts will just believe them. And in part because they don't want to be, you know, just politically, they don't want to be in the position of, you know, they're the ones who screwed up, you know, some mafia trial or something. So it's cowardice. It's also dishonesty. And so when they make these assertions, the courts just assume them to be true.
I don't mind that they're in ongoing investigation, but it's in, okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, and then when you say, you know, I want to look further, you know, they'll go to the plaintiff and say, do you have any evidence that there's not an investigation? I say, well, how could I, the whole point here is to ask for public records, you know, ask for the records. How do I know that until after we get the records?
Yeah.
You know, so the game is rigged again that way. And I tried to help out Judicial Watch there. They're trying to get information about the 14,000 hours of video that are being withheld.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this thing because, again, one of the main things that Judicial Watch did when I worked there and even what Freedom Watch does in Larry Klayman is Freedom of Information Act requests. And we litigate things. And, of course, a lot of the pleadings and stuff that were filed, you know, I wrote them, or at least wrote the drafts, and Larry Klayman would put his name on them after some reviewing and editing. So, you know, I'm very familiar with well, and his, you know, well, I don't know. His explanation is that for fundraising purposes, it has to look like a, you know, the great man needs some. And he's a great guy.
Oh.
Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying
I like Larry. He's been on the show.
If you go and
It's just funny,
yeah,
though, because we write our own bills
if you go
here.
And you look, if you go yeah. and you look at the pleadings, you say, well, I don't see John's name on there. Then that's true. But I did most of the work. And not for everything they did, of course, but just on many,
right.
on many cases I did. They've done, you know, tons of cases. But but anyway, so the problem, so I sent Tom Fitton a declaration saying, look, because you're in the problem of saying that the government says we searched and we didn't find anything. So unless a whistleblower inside says, no, they didn't search, you know, and here's the proof, there's no way for the Freedom of Information Act plaintiff to win. Or if they say that, oh, we need to withhold this information, without a whistleblower inside mm-hmm. inside saying, saying no, this information is completely harmless. There's no reason to withhold it. The mm-hmm. claims of withholding it are bogus. Then the game is just rigged against the FOIA plaintiff. And
well, are there?
You know, so,
are there restrictions?
So they'll say, let me finish. So while you
okay,
finish,
I'm
you
sorry.
Know, so,
yeah, go ahead.
So they'll say that you, you know, do you have any evidence that this information would not harm an ongoing investigation? And you say, A, no, because I'm not inside, and B, that's what I'm trying to find out by the Freedom of Information Act request. So this is stupid. Mm. And so I prepared it, but when it comes to January 6th, now really 20,000 hours of video, I said, look, I'm an attorney. I have been able to see these under the protective order, and I can tell you from actual knowledge that this information, you know, the claim of secrecy here is bogus. And I signed affidavit. Nah, Tom Fitton didn't want to use it because you know because I think he's got a feud with Larry Klayman and vice probably, you know,
oh,
back
I hate
and
this
forth
petty
and,
stuff.
And he thinks that I'm associated. I've tried to be very careful not to get in the middle of that.
Right.
Because I don't have time for such nonsense. But
yep.
But
turf battle.
Tom Fitton seems to think that, you know, he seems to be unable to separate me from Larry Klayman when that stuff. So I handed him the answer on a silver platter. They're still fighting with the U.S. Capitol Police, and they're not doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have this problem. It's like you have to prove what the government knows to find out what the government knows.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Larry Klayman in Judicial Watch in the 90s, you know, ran circles around the Clinton administration. All of the stuff that came out, it came out because Larry Klayman used FOIA and Judge Royce Lambert let them, gave him a very long rope. If you go and you look at the precedent since the 90s, the D.C. Circuit has basically closed every door and locked it. So anything that actually helps the public, the courts will find a way to disable it. And so the precedents since then make it so narrow that I don't even know how Judicial Watch today gets any information because the way the courts have interpreted things. So anyway, so there you go. So they basically make up all these interpretations that, like, for example, when the government says, you know, there's an ongoing investigation. We had a case where, what's his name? I have to look it up. There's this guy, I think Peter Paul. I might be mixing him up. Excuse me, don't take it too, because we had lots of cases. I mentioned this before. He blew the whistle on Hillary Clinton, somehow lived, and he instead of using that information to prosecute Hillary Clinton for fundraising violations,
right.
They prosecuted him instead, the whistleblower.
Of course.
And he then served 10 years in prison.
Oh, God.
And so if there's so, and then he wanted to get documents, like probably 15 years after the fact, about all of this through the Freedom of Information Act, and the FBI, the government claimed ongoing investigation. Now, there's no statute of limitations that survives after he's already served 10 years in jail. Now, it could be you know, he might not be the target of the investigation, but nobody else. So we know for an absolute fact that there is no ongoing investigation because the statute of limitations has expired.
Oh, and that's interesting.
And yet the court didn't care.
Huh. So that 50-year-old murder case that I mentioned from that previous article, that's hysterical. Are there anything – I mean, I haven't looked up FOIA for a while, but are there any things that are specifically mentioned that it doesn't cover, like confidential sources, people that haven't been convicted, you know, methods, things like that? Or is that just stuff that they make up in D.C. saying that goes to sources and methods?
It covers everything, but there are – oh, probably 30 to 40 exemptions, counting subparagraphs.
Okay.
So at the first instance, the first cut, it covers everything. But then again, all the exemptions,
mm-hmm.
you know, riddle it. You know, Swiss cheese has fewer holes.
Yeah.
So on the first, at the first level, it includes everything, but then it takes it all away again. Takes it all back. So
I'm just waiting for someone in Congress to do something and actually stand up to these people and say it's not good enough. You have to answer this question. We are charged with oversight. We're overseeing you. We have your budget. We need to know what you're doing. We're going to investigate this. You can say what you're investigating, what you're not investigating. We don't need confidential sources. We don't need to know your exact methods for doing things, but you do have to tell us what you're investigating and what you're not investigating so we can determine that the investigation is going the right way. Because once it's closed, it's too late. So the fact that I don't mind an ongoing investigation. What I mind is that they refuse to talk about it until it's over, and then you can't do anything. And it may never be.
Yeah,
over.
maybe they could have an automatic appeal to the IG. Republican Congress or sensible Congress should probably strengthen the IGs, their independence and their power. Inspector General.
I understand. We need to fix this.
Yeah.
This is a big problem.
Have a movie and they have this Rottweiler guarding, you know, the bad guy's mansion and the good guys come in and throw him a steak and the Rottweiler just sits there and eats the steak and lets them do whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying the inspector generals are on the take. I'm just saying that they're watchdogs more in name only than they are.
Well, how much power do they have?
Serious.
I mean, they can't direct the Attorney General. So the Inspector IG for the IG, the Inspector General for the Justice Department, cannot tell Merrick Garland what to do. I mean, he reports to Congress, right? Or what does he do? Make reports? I mean, what do they exactly do?
I think that's correct. And if they can issue a scathing report, you know, harsh letter to follow.
and then what?
So. Yeah, well, it depends on everybody else being honest, which they're not.
Mm-hmm.
Our founding fathers, both in the religious context and in other contexts, explained that this is only going to work mm-hmm. if everybody is honest. If the citizenry stay involved. In the Federalist Papers, time and time again, the question is raised: you know, could Congress do X, Y, Z? And the answer of our founders is: oh, the public would never stand for that.
Mm-hmm.
Our Constitution, it depends, according to our founders, to the citizens getting involved and speaking up and not tolerating it,
yep.
according to the Federalist mm-hmm. Papers. So, yeah, if he issues a report and nobody cares, then, you know, it's not going to amount to anything.
Yeah. What about the courts? You know, we've talked about this before, too, this whole idea of interpreting. I think that's an illegal power. I think that is a usurped power. And I still contend that the biggest problem with the courts all the way through the Supreme Court is that they think they can create their own power. And if the Constitution says one thing above all else, especially the 10th Amendment, that no government entity, no federal government entity especially, shall create its own power. And the idea that they can to interpret is to create your own power. Because now you're saying what the law is according to you. Now you're saying what the Constitution says
right.
according to you. Not what the Constitution says, but what it says according to you. You know, and they find rights
right.
in the penumbra. Well, there's nothing – the Supreme Court can't create rights. They can't just make stuff up and add it to the Constitution like it's there between the lines.
Well,
they
not
should
even
be
just
thrown
the
out
Constitution,
of office.
But as we're talking about interpreting just even statutes, it's like what statute could you pass to fix this? Mm-hmm. Well, you're going to have to get past the court. If you're trying to fix something by legislation, mm-hmm. the courts are just going to be a slippery pile of ooze.
Well, then you replace them. You impeach them. See, the Congress, they can impeach any Supreme Court justice and remove them for bad behavior. And they could replace any judge all the way down the line, the entire federal judiciary. They could start over with a brand new one. They could cancel all the offices below the Supreme Court. It's the only one that's constitutionally mandated. Reconstitute the entire judicial system with better people, or get rid of them all, keep the same structure, and put better people in. They could do all that. There's no lifetime appointments in the federal government, and I don't think the state governments have lifetime appointments either by in the Constitution, in their state constitution.
Well, let me give you an example of some of the problem is they will say, let's say you want to pass legislation changing the exemption, thing under FOIA.
Mm-hmm.
The courts will say, well, we presume that the legislator – federal or state, mm-hmm. knew the pre-existing state of the law, even if they didn't,
mm-hmm.
and did not intend to change our precedents unless the legislature is unbelievably explicitly clear that saying this, dear bozos, this is aimed at you. You shall not, we are explicitly attacking these precedents. And, of course, legislatures don't like to do that, and they have to get a majority and things like that. So you pass a law saying exemption does not mean, exemption for investigative authority does not mean what you've been claiming, and we're going to change the procedures. The courts will take that and then say, that was against the backdrop of the way things have been done, and, surely the Congress didn't really mean that to undo decades of precedent. So we're going to reinterpret the new law to be consistent with our abuses. I'm not exaggerating by much. It depends on a case-by-case basis.
So we need to have some kind of guidelines on we need to remove the practice of interpretation and get that out of the lexicon of words that are commonly used. Because to interpret, I'm now going to start saying, if you can interpret, you can rewrite the law. Interpretation is actually legislation. And since legislation, 100%
exactly
of legislation belongs with the Congress, then the courts cannot legislate. The courts obviously can't legislate, therefore the courts cannot interpret. The courts have to take the laws as they're written. The courts have to take the Constitution as it's written. They cannot put the intent in there. They can only use the words. It's like a contract. So the contract, actually this might be a good way to explain it. The contract between Congress and the courts is that the Congress writes the contract. That's their job. The court abides by the contract. That's their job, unless the contract violates the supreme law contract, the Constitution, in which they say, this law that you have, this contract you've created, this is not valid because the Constitution says otherwise. Not we interpret that it says otherwise. It specifically says otherwise. That's what they can do. But anything short of that, they can't. Anything short of that, the Congress can say, you've gone beyond your constitutional authority. You're in the area of interpretation. You're off the court. That's the check and balance. And it's missing because they never take judges off the court. And they should. Oh, by the way, Supreme Court, Constitution doesn't say justice for Supreme Court, just says judges. I found that interesting. I noted that little tidbit the other day. They're not justices. They're judges, according to the Constitution.
Say that again.
Oh, they're not. There are no Supreme Court justices. Well, it says right here, Section 1, Article 3, the judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. The judges, both of the Supreme and inferior courts, shall hold their offices during good behavior.
So if somebody has been appointed to be a Supreme Court justice, they haven't been appointed to anything at all.
That's an interesting thought. I never thought about that, but that's a brilliant point. Because there are no Supreme Court justices. It says right here, the judges, both of the Supreme and inferior courts, so all federal judicial officials, the preside over cases are judges. There are no justices. Shall hold their offices during good behavior. Well, we actually tried to do that with Brianna Cannon, who's our 16-year-old government inquiry reporter. She's on Tuesday mornings, first thing
at
7. And we talked about that last week, that what is good behavior. She said, well, what is good behavior? I said, what do you think good behavior is? So now she's working on it. We're going to try and come up with some criteria for good behavior. My criteria for good behavior is not interpreting, but following the Constitution as the supreme law of the land.
Well,
and then, you know, go ahead.
There was, I think it was Todd Akins who got, you know, bad mouth for just, you know, for a perfectly legitimate, shall we say, jokingly, turn of phrase that was misunderstood. And he actually seemed to get a little bit too hip,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the modern generation, at least a generation or two back, would talk about, you know, whether something is righteous or whether something is legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
And so he used the word legitimate not to mean that it's okay,
mm-hmm.
but to mean for real.
Oh.
He said if it's, you know, he said that if it's a legitimate rape, meaning that it actually did happen, and everybody took that because, you know, everybody's an idiot these days and they don't know the English language. It's like you say, it's like
yeah.
if I say I don't like green cars, the
right.
people who don't know anything about grammar will say, oh, Mosley doesn't like cars. No, I don't like green cars.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, I didn't say I don't like any car. I don't like, you know, or I would say, you know, if I were to say I will not buy a stolen car, the people who went to government schools and got an edumacation, as my dad would say, they would say, oh, Mosley thinks all cars are stolen. No, I didn't say
mm-hmm.
anything about all cars.
Mm-hmm.
It's the stolen ones I don't like. I'm not going to buy. But so when Todd Akin said that if it's legitimate rape, there then these things happen. And what he meant was is sometimes the rape never happened. But everybody took that to mean he was saying that rape is can be legitimate. Like
yeah, or justifiable.
Okay to rape someone.
Yes. Yeah, it's
and
like
no one with half a brain
actual.
Over the age of 5
yeah.
you know, believes that, but they're liars.
Mm-hmm.
So they lied about Todd Akin, but Todd Akin was one of the people who was trying to lead the charge on defining defining what good behavior means, which might be why they had to take him out. And he
so who's he again?
It's a whole
who's
lot
Todd
easier.
Akin?
Huh?
Who is he again, and why was he trying to redefine or
he
define
was a
good
congressman,
behavior?
And he was running for Senate.
Okay.
And he basically put him up there with these failed, terrible candidates, and he actually never did anything wrong except they misinterpreted what he said.
Right.
You know, they tried to lie about what he said. So he had some legislation developed. He was working, you know, he kept introducing legislation, and the, you know, nobody, it never went anywhere because the Republican Party, you know, doesn't actually stand for anything and except getting donations. And so but when I thought about it, it's easier to say what's not good behavior, I think, than it is to give an all-encompassing definition of what good behavior is. I think we can all agree on, you know, X, Y, Z is not good behavior.
Well, I'd rather define it that way, too. That's like saying, you know, your rights are only these, you know, or this is the only way you can express your rights, you know, trying to list them. In other words, these things qualify as free speech. Well, you don't want to do that. You just say that the Congress can make no law abridging free speech. So if you're, that's like they, you know, Obama said, well, that's a negative right. It's not negative in the sense that it's bad. It's negative in the sense that it's as opposed to a positive, you have a right to. They're saying the government cannot touch, you know, cannot touch your right. So that's a different orientation. So it's like good behavior. You know, I think good behavior
and
is
I think that
whatever
you're
they
going
do
to
until,
remove a judge. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay.
No.
Well, good behavior would be, to me, following the Constitution. Now, I'm not going to outline all the things that I would consider good behavior, because there's a whole bunch of things. Good behavior might be to throw a case out of court. Good behavior might be to resign. Good behavior could be all kinds of things. But I would define it as you are outside of good behavior if you are interpreting the Constitution, violating the Constitution, and maybe a few other things, like, you know, trying to cause an insurrection or supporting a coup. That's maybe outside good behavior. But I'm just going to say, but I would leave it as good behavior to interpret by the individual cases. That's why we have cases to go before Congress and say, we think this person engaged in bad behavior because. That's the way to do it, without listing every possible thing that's either good or bad.
I would say things like misrepresenting a precedent. That's not good. That's not good behavior. Misrepresenting the facts when they say, you know, here are the facts, and those are not the facts.
Yeah.
You know, in order to come to the result they want to come to, that would not be good behavior.
Claiming ongoing investigation to hide something illegal, that would not be good behavior.
But the thing is, the Congress, I believe, would need to define that ahead of time.
Uh-huh.
You can't, to remove a judge for bad behavior when you didn't put them on warning would be wrong, and it would not be accepted by, you know, by a public who doesn't understand the concept that these judges do not have lifetime employment. They've been told that.
Yes.
They've been told that by Schoolhouse Rock or whatever.
Oh, they've been told by the senators and the candidates. Well, here's something, too. Here's a question for you. The people that were nominated to be Supreme Court judges, I'm not going to start using that word, just like I don't say fossil fuels anymore, I say organic fuels. It's much more different connotation. But the three stooges that were nominated for judges recently, Neil Gorsuch, Amy Coney Barrett, and Frat Boy Kavanaugh, they have all said that Marbury versus Madison is settled law, which, of course, it isn't. It's not law at all. It's a court opinion. And they've said that all justices, which we know are judges, are there for lifetime appointments. They've all said that. Now, you know, and I know, and I know they know that that's not true, because they've read the Constitution. They know it says good behavior. And yet they go the party line that they're lifetime appointments. Explain that one. You know, they know they're lying. We know they're lying. The American public doesn't know they're lying, because everybody believes the lie because they've heard it so often. So it becomes true for them. The assumption becomes the truth. The perception becomes the reality.
But that's what,
even though I know they know that it says good behavior.
But that's what I keep saying on here. And again, it's not that I'm so smart or so wise or so great. It's that, you know, if you face something irrational or insanity, your brain tries to make sense of it. It's like, what the hell, you know?
Yeah.
And so what I've understood in the political world is that an expert is just somebody who copied what the person next to them said. So,
why I stop saying that I don't consult constitutional scholars, you know, when I talk about the Constitution. I just read it. Because I don't want their prejudices.
Yeah.
I don't want their wrong assumptions. I don't want their lies. But people say, well, you're not consulting experts. Are you an expert? Well, as a matter of fact, apparently now I am, because I can read it. That makes me an expert beyond people that are lying about it. So that's,
right.
You know.
So,
but it doesn't matter whether I'm
an expert
or not.
An expert in constitutional law is somebody who's never read the Constitution, but
exactly
just memorized what the next term said.
Memorize the assumptions. Yeah,
exactly.
That's a good point. Yeah,
and you have to go back to clear away the assumptions. You have to go back to the original source.
Yeah, which is not that hard
and
to do. I got three of them on my desk right now. You know, I got three of them in case I drop one or two during the show. I've always got to read, you know, with a Constitution within reach. You know, how I have
to
read them back.
So everybody says,
yeah.
Uh-huh. You know, everybody hears people say, you know, that they're appointed for life. Well, how hard would it be to just look it up? You know, everybody says Congress has the power of oversight. Really? Where is that in the Constitution? Show me.
Yeah.
You know, the Congress has the power to subpoena people. Okay, turn to that page. You know, it's not there.
Yeah.
And I understand the reasoning why they have interpreted it that way. But that, you know, when you have to, you know, as I said, when you're subpoenaing people in aid of, look, would we like to have Congress know something about what they're legislating rather than being completely ignorant? Yeah. But that doesn't mean they have the compulsory power to subpoena somebody. You know, if they hold open casting, you know, I'd like you to come in and talk to me about, about healthcare. They got thousands of volunteers. They don't need to subpoena anybody.
Yeah.
But, well, you know, but go ahead. I mean, well, here's an example of how they make it up.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, Article 1, Section 1, all legislative powers. Legislative powers, not just legislatures, you know, just legislative. This is legislative powers here and granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States. Well, what would you include in legislative powers? I would think that you have to, in the process of legislating, ask questions, be able to determine the scope of the legislation, be able to determine the limits of legislation, be able to do legal research on the legislation, be able to research the branches of government that are going to enforce that legislation, be able to conduct a budget analysis to determine how much money it costs for that legislation. So legislative powers,
but does that
to me,
mean,
go ahead.
Does that mean that you have the power to force someone who doesn't want to come talk to you? You know, it's like a person
no.
with no friends.
Right. No, it doesn't.
You know, nobody will talk to us, so we want to force them to come talk to us.
Nope.
I mean, that's why there's a Library of Congress.
Yeah.
You know, with hundreds of thousands of books that nobody ever reads. So that hopefully the Congress will, you know, can inform themselves on things.
Beautiful.
They have something called the Congressional. They have something called the Congressional Research Service.
Right.
Any member of Congress can just send a letter over to the Congressional Research Service and say, "I'd like to know more about XYZ."
Yeah, give me a brief.
And they'll get a report.
Yep.
Yeah, and they'll get a report. But
well,
they've
got the best
gonna...
information sources, but, you know, they're no good unless they use them. It's like you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them use the Library of Congress. You know,
that's an interesting point, because I bet that if all these people who are subpoenaing, you know, their political enemies,
mm-hmm.
if you went to look at their library card, so to speak,
uh-huh.
did they ever ask the Congressional Research Service about this topic? Probably not.
Yeah.
They went
well, I thought
straight
they were mostly
to...
economic, aren't they? Or they research anything? I thought they mostly did budget bills and things
oh,
like
no,
that.
Oh, no, they'll research anything. Oh,
oh,
God,
okay.
No, they'll research it. They've done all kinds of political controversies, legal controversies.
Huh. Are they available for public appearances like on our show? Or are they secret only for Congress? In other words, are congressional requests for information
secret? Well, I don't know if there are secret reports, but there's hundreds or thousands of public ones.
Okay.
When they do a report, they typically – publish it for the entire Congress and the entire public.
Okay.
And any member of Congress can request it. So if you can persuade a member of Congress, say, could you please do a CRS? You know, it's just a letter. All I have to do is type up a letter and put it in the inner office mail. It doesn't even cost them a stamp. So the only thing, of course, like everything else in the law, you have to be really careful how you word it, because they'll be squirrely and try to squirm out of it.
Well, they always say the nonpartisan Congressional Research Service, which I think is a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah, there's no, you know, anybody who works in government is, you know, 90% chance they're leftist.
Yeah.
Which
brings up another key point. The parliamentarian of the Senate, they're only supposed to have one reconciliation bill per session, and it has to be tied to the Budget Act. It can't be a standalone bill. And yet, the Senate parliamentarian, who I'm sure is a hardcore Democrat, has ruled several times that in order, and I think for the purpose of getting around the filibuster, has ruled that several bills actually are reconciliation. We know damn well they're not. There's another problem. The parliamentarian. Have we talked about that? Whoop. You okay? Your phone just sounded like your phone blew up. That
Congress shall set its own rules.
Okay.
And there is that. Now, the parliamentarian probably should be independent, like the inspector general.
Yeah.
But you know, the courts and the Constitution have said is that if the Congress, you know, that nobody can question how the Congress does its own business.
Hmm.
So that's a little bit of a complication there. But it's wrong. I mean, it's completely phony.
Mm-hmm.
Your
phone sounded like it almost blew up. Then you cut out for a second. Then I heard this massive burst of static. Everything okay there?
Yeah, I mean, normally if that happens and you hear an ear piercing scream, it means a nuclear bomb just went off within a few hundred miles.
No, it wasn't that. It was like static. It was like the ultimate fuzz sound. But
weird.
If that's the FBI
cutting
into our conversation, the least they can do is announce themselves and then call us and join the show like everybody else does. So I'll give my daily invitation to the FBI, KGB. This is Action Radio. Call us at 215-383-3832. You don't have to listen to us secretly because everything I say is out in the open anyway. So go ahead and call.
Yeah, these are the fascist boys of intimidation.
Oh, please. Listen, I've already announced, too. If you're going to come raid me, at least, you know, come over at a decent hour so we can have coffee, we can talk. I mean, come on. Be reasonable, guys.
That's like Santa Claus. Having a cookies out overnight.
Exactly. Yeah, you want to come visit? Just, you know, do it in the sunshine after the show, and then we'll sit around and talk. I say, everything I think and
yeah,
I do is on the show anyway, so, you know, I'm not hiding anything. So go ahead.
Right. No, that's why I put videos from January 6th.
Mm-hmm.
I put them up on YouTube.
Yeah, that's interesting.
A year ago. So I said, look, you want to see what I got? Here it is. It's up and
yeah.
It's up for everyone to see. It's on YouTube.
Well, listen to our January 6th
yeah,
show. You were there. You called us from Washington, January 6th. Josie
yeah,
did,
I
too.
Did.
It's all on podcast. You know, you want to know something?
Yeah,
well,
tell
you.
Along with about 10,000 other people.
Hey, we have service. It works.
So, I was wondering, how do I deal with this? Because they're going to – because the thing is, if you're explaining – you know, they say – and they say if you're explaining, you're losing. It's better to go first. You know, rather than try to say, look, you know, no, I never meant to keep this from you. So I just said, I put it up on YouTube and said, here it is, everybody.
Yep.
Enjoy.
Yep. Hey.
But
we had Stuart Rhodes,
that when I,
you know, calling from prison. We had January 6th, people who were there. You know, we had General McInerney before the election. We knew it was going to be a fraud. We knew it was going to be stolen. We knew all that stuff. We had all these people ahead of time. We're good.
But when I finally, I've got to find, because I didn't know if I was going back to Florida or what I was going to do, where I have lots of family, cousins,
uh-huh.
and uh-huh. trying to help my elderly aunts, things like that. And
yeah.
I still don't know. But when I get a final place, I think I'll put some cookies out on the front step to the FBI. Here you go. Here's a glass of milk.
John, we have to make an Action Radio FBI welcome mat. You know, FBI, please wipe your feet.
please don't do that.
Go ahead. What?
You're welcome to come in. There's no need to break the door.
Don't break the door.
You know,
yeah. Don't wake me up at 3 in the morning. You know, I'll answer your questions. I'm happy to talk to you. Besides, I'm going to have more questions for them than they're going to have for me.
Exactly. Well, I think the aunt, if I recall before the select committee,
uh-huh.
my every answer I give would be no police officers died on January 6th. Sorry.
Yeah.
And then they asked me about something else. Oh, by the way, did you know that no police officers died on January 6th?
Yeah.
I would, until they get it, I would answer every question the same way.
Oh, see, I'd be saying, and what was Congress doing for 7 hours while Trump supporters were taking selfies above? Is that when the real coup took place? You know, that's...
Right. They could say, yeah, because, and the thing is, too, and this is true of general good practice in depositions, not just about mm-hmm. January 6th, not just about politics,
mm-hmm.
is if they ask and they say, okay, can you tell me, who did you talk to about the coup? So, I don't know anything about a coup. I don't understand your question. You know, okay, so what, you know, tell me what you heard about the riot. I don't know anything about any riot. I've never
heard
of
a
riot.
I don't know anything about it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's funny.
I mean,
people taking selfies. Oh, you mean the Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in? I would work that in the conversation
right.
a bunch of times. Yeah.
But I'm saying that because their question is an abuse. A loaded leading question is abusive.
Right.
You know, I'm not saying that to be mean. Or deceptive. I'm saying it to call out the fact that their question is illegitimate. It's an illegitimate question.
Can you rephrase the question in your answer? Can you say, oh, you mean the Capitol Hill Invitational wine? You don't want to do that.
Well, I mean, you could maybe. You could say, okay, well, let me tell you about the perfectly peaceful protests that I know about.
Okay.
In which everybody obeyed the law that I know of.
Yep.
Except the
government who Michael J. Byrd, who assassinated Ashley Babbitt.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I was there filming for National File. Mainly.
Oh.
And National File broke the story on Ashley Babbitt's murder.
Interesting.
You know, they
managed
filming? Some one
Did
of
you
their
film
stringers.
That? Was that you?
I didn't. One of their stringers.
Right.
saw the gurney coming out, followed one of the guys, and he got someone's cell phone camera video and got their agreement, and it went up live. Well, not live. They posted
well, close enough.
The video of her being shot before anybody else did.
Wow.
And that's whom I was, you know, acting as a stringer for on January 6th. The organization that broke the story.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I don't hear much from them now, though. You know, are they hiding? I don't think they've broken many stories since. Or I just haven't looked. I haven't seen
stuff. Oh, well, they're trying to. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, it's not for lack of trying.
Okay.
But,
well, I
know
some stories
they're
not they can
hiding,
break.
But they're,
I got some great stories they can break.
Please talk to them. I mean, the only thing is that Noel Fritz, one of the editors there, they had to let one of their editors go.
Yeah.
So that sort of slowed them down. And then Noel, every time I want to give him a scoop, the conversation ends up with, well, why don't you write it and I'll edit it. Like, no, I mean, come on, I'm busy. Yeah.
Well, I've talked to him about our bills. You know, he said, well, they haven't passed yet. I said, that's when you're waiting to cover them?
Passed yet? They're citizen legislature.
Exactly. They haven't gotten into Congress yet. Yeah, well, I mean,
yeah, I mean Noel,
Noel, but,
Noel,
you know,
Noel is
ahead.
A fabulous guy,
yes,
but nobody's perfect, you know, and he's, you know, especially when people are busy. And, you know, it's one mm-hmm. thing when people are sitting in their couch watching, you know, what was the Dukes of Hazzard or something rerun. And, mm-hmm. but when people are doing lots of things, I can understand their brain might be a little bit, you mm-hmm. know, scrambled with all the things they're doing. I call Noel Fritz a conservative Swiss Army knife. He does everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Noel,
so anyway,
if you're listening,
yeah,
you can call in too.
They do things.
Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead, Jonathan.
It's like I keep saying, it's like all this news, mm-hmm. somebody breaks the news and it never goes anywhere. Nobody picks it up.
Yep.
There's tremendous stuff happening every day. Mm-hmm. And one conservative outlet publishes it, and then it's like the cone of silence.
Stories, they'd all pick it up if there was a decent story.
Right. It's like if you go to Gateway Pundit now,
uh-huh.
End of last week, the J6 committee said they just obtained walkie-talkie communications of the Oath Keepers from inside the Capitol. I know that recording because I got it when I was one of the attorneys. That's not what it is. It's people talking across the country watching TV.
Ouch.
There's no crowd noise.
Yeah.
They're very clearly saying during the course of 2 hours and 20 minutes that they're watching, you know, CNN just reported this. I'm watching the C-SPAN feed just came back on. They're watching TV. They're not on walkie-talkie, which implies only a short range from the Capitol.
Right.
And they're not at the Capitol, and they're not involved. They're just a bunch of people. I hope that people understand what Mystery Science Theater 3000 is, although it's a little bit weird. It's about they watch really bad movies, and they make fun of what they're watching on TV.
Hmm.
So this new revelation, go to gatewaypundit.com,
mm-hmm.
Is about a bunch of people watching TV and talking trash about what they're seeing on TV. And the J6 committee is trying to say that's the Oath Keepers from the Capitol. It's not. And I've got the video. I've got the proof.
Yeah.
But, again, it's been up on Gateway Pundit for, I think, 36 hours. Nobody's picked it up.
Yeah.
So that's the weird thing about this. He's like, why isn't this stuff being reported? It's being reported, but then it like goes thump in the – it just falls flat on the ground and it doesn't go anywhere. It's like throwing a rock into a pond and there are no ripples.
Yeah. Well, that's why I started Action Radio, is because talk radio was doing nothing. They talk. They tell these – you know, they have these brilliant sources and great information, and then nothing would happen. They wouldn't follow it up with any action.
I'm so sick of that.
Yeah, and that's what we do here.
As much as I loved Rush, he would not – he would stay – away from any call to action.
Exactly. Which to me was a waste. You got, 50 million listeners, and he didn't tell them to do anything or ask them to do anything? This whole show is dedicated to asking people to do things. Send the bill links
even
to the appropriate legislator and media. Take action.
Even the dignified.
Even the dignified Ronald Reagan. Mm-hmm. He would tell people. Although I tried to find the speech where he said this, and I couldn't find it. It's melded throughout every one of his speeches, where he tells people to call the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
How did Ronald Reagan, who was too conservative for the Republican Party, facing a Democrat Party controlled Congress, mm-hmm. get these things done? Because he told people to pick up the phone and call the Capitol switchboard.
And we're doing
the
same
thing. And the switchboard melted down.
Yep. And we're doing the same thing, except that now that we have computers and now that we have the internet, we're telling people to copy the bill link and send it in so Congress knows exactly what the bill is. Now, what they do with it is up to them.
Right.
If it's really close to what we put in, I'm going to support it. But if it's not, if our constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money, if they use the word accept, then it's unacceptable. If they say except for, you know, war, you know, natural disasters, things like that, all things they can save for, you know, in fact, I had a person post that just the other day. Well, what about war? Can't Congress borrow money to wage war? No. So if the missiles are on the way, the last thing the Congress should be doing is meeting to borrow money. You know, it's too late. So that's how I explain it. I said, no, if you can't save up for
you
it, if you're
have
ready to go, then don't do
that,
it. But you're too late. So a natural disaster, they're not that expensive. Yeah, I mean, it might cost a few billion dollars, but we could fund the 20 years worth of natural disasters on Afghanistan and Iraq alone. There's no reason to spend money there.
Put money away for a rainy day.
That's what we have a treasury for. It's a bank.
And I heard somebody point this out when I was in the government.
Uh-huh.
And it was a consultant giving training, and he was like just sort of sarcastic about the thing. You know,
right.
It's like every year the agency has to put together the president's budget. That's
mm-hmm.
not an emergency. It happens every year. You know, somewhere in America, there's going to be a natural disaster this year. You know it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a surprise. You know, you should budget for it. Like, you know, your car, I don't want to speak this over you, but, you know, cars break down. So if you have now, you know, when you're living hand to mouth, yeah, it's very hard to do, but in theory, you should have money set aside for, you know, sooner or later, I'm going to have to replace my brakes
mm-hmm.
Or something like that. So I don't know how much time we have, but.
Well, Dorothy's on the line now. She's listening, but we're pretty much it. And next week, I'd really like to get to our bill, the liquidity bill, because there's a continuing resolution. There's some budget things coming up. All the things that we need the liquidity bill for and our 30-day comment period mandatory on any budget bill over $100 million. And so those are two things that we should definitely look into. But in terms of the action that we take here, we have very specific bills for very specific problems. And when I was on Emerald Robinson, I mean, she has a huge audience. She's on Lindell TV, which has a huge audience. All of those people are America First patriots. You know, I would say 90% of the audience. Then you got 10% liberals listening in to, you know, see what the enemy's doing. But for the most part, these are extremely activist people. And I didn't hear a thing about it. She talked about her vaccine product liability bill. This would change the entire big pharma forever. Well, until it's changed again. But this bill would have literally billions of dollars, you know, in transfer of big pharma to their victims, people who died and people who were injured. I can't even get the national trial lawyers. I've called them a few times. I said, look, I got a bill here for vaccine product liability. Will you support it? And they never get back to me. I'm thinking, you idiots, this is billions of dollars to you. What the hell is your freaking problem? You know, and yet nothing happens. They don't get it. They don't understand. They don't see the potential.
They're spending a fortune on trying to shake down Camp Lejeune.
Oh, yeah.
But
you want to talk about that next week?
Nah, God, all I can say is it's stupid because didn't you know that in naturally occurring water reservoirs, there's arsenic, there's uranium, you know, because all those things happen in nature. They're not man-made.
Yeah.
There's, you know, the fact that they, you know, the water supply may have had benzene or whatever. Yeah, benzene happens in nature. Humans did not invent
it. It's a petroleum distillate. It comes from fuel. It comes from refining oil for the most part, benzene, toluene, xylene, those kind of things. They're natural.
Well, they may
byproducts.
Have made it worse, but
yeah.
it's too easy for the lawyers just to say, oh, we found arsenic there. Yeah, it was always there. It's been there for hundreds of millions of years. You know, I'm just saying they have to prove it. Did the military do something awful, you know, and stupid? Possibly, you know, probably. But I just think they have to prove it. It's okay. Like this whole thing about burn pits. We had a burn pit on our 30-acre little farm outside Boca Raton. Farmer families have burn pits. I mean, so the military had to, they didn't have, trash pickup on the battlefield. Big whoop. What do they think that the military is burning that's so bad? I mean, maybe it is. I don't know. But yeah. I don't like the assumptions. If somebody says, they put some toxic chemical in the burn pit. Okay, A, they're stupid. Why the hell did they do that? But okay, yeah. I gotcha. But if you just say burn pit and everybody's like, oh, that's terrible. Okay, show me the facts. Anyway, yeah. Apologies to Dorothy there. And,
well, she's
online
too.
Two predictions.
So, yeah.
Ron DeSantis will not be Ron DeSantis has not broken any law, and the more they try to make an issue out of it, the more the American people will think that leftists are insane. It may take them a few weeks to process it, but I think by Election Day, the American people think you leftists are out of your freaking mind. These guys got a free.
Are you talking about Martha's Vineyard?
What I want to do is start. We need a petition page. Say, please send me to Martha's Vineyard. I will volunteer for an all paid expense trip to Martha Vineyard.
Well, we should
boo-hoo.
Call it a tour. We should. They should have called it a excursion. We're having an excursion to Martha's Vineyard or a tourist or the. It should have come out. They should have funded it through the Florida Bureau of Tourism. call it an exchange. Dorothy, what do you think?
That is brilliant. And they could have said, because allegedly they said they were going to Boston. So yeah, but we just wanted to show you the beauty of America on your way to Boston.
Exactly, the freedom.
And it is possible that the staff screwed it up. That's a problem. That's why I think Ron DeSantis should have immediately come out and he should have said, I hope our staff did it right on the ground. If anybody says they're sorry they were sent to Martha's Vineyard, we'll fix it. If Martha's yep. Vineyard is so horrible, we will make it right.
I just think it's funny that a bunch of rich white liberals are objecting to a bunch of brown people being shipped to their island when they preach diversity. I mean, that's the funniest thing of all. But maybe we should focus on that. I'll see if I still try to make contact with the DeSantis office. But, the Florida Department of Tourism should have sent them.
I think that's a brilliant. That's brilliant. Because
okay.
People said we thought we were going to Boston. That doesn't mean you can't take a load off your feet for – And
well, it's
one
a government
of the most beautiful
place to get lost.
America first. That's true. They lost their luggage. All right, I'll talk to you later then, and I apologize for going over.
Oh, thanks, Jonathan. We got a little time. We can go over to with Dorothy as well. Whew, that was fascinating. Fun. Dorothy,
okay.
You want to comment on any of our legal issues? Oh, go ahead, Jonathan.
I do have you wanted to do those next week, I think, and I am getting a call from a coworker there.
Okay. Well, go back to real life. I want to talk to Dorothy. It's been fun. We'll do this next
week. Okay.
Thank you so
much. All right, thanks.
Okay. Bye now. Dorothy, see all the fun we have here?
So much fun.
Well, if you have a few minutes extra, we'll get you a whole hour here too. I'm sorry. We it's been rambling. I was, I've been pretty intense since 7 o'clock my time. So we're going on our third hour here, but this is wild stuff. So how you been? What's going on? And are you remote or are you actually in a fixed location at this time? And how's life?
I'm in a fixed location, thankfully. Everything worked out this morning. So
good.
Got my car out of the dealership. Everything's intact. And I'm in my comfortable, normal, talking to Greg location.
Well, you should be comfortable because we occasionally, get some controversial subjects here, which makes it all the more fascinating. Yeah.
The
so
Martha's
what's happening?
Vineyard situation yeah. is there's some... So much humor in this.
Well, that's like I said, I just came up with that thing too that they should have been sent through the Florida Department of Tourism. That way, it wouldn't look like a judicial function. It's like, no, we're on exchange.
Yeah, I'm not sure why. I think Ron DeSantis is pretty clever actually, and I'm not sure why they're demonizing him for this. I think anything he does. He's going to get criticized
because the last thing leftists want is to be victims of their own policies. That's for other people. That's for the little people. Who was that? New York, Hensley. Remember the Helmsley the woman in New York who said taxes are for the little people, not for us. You know, so it's just funny, but I don't like it because it takes people that should be deported and actually rewards them with going to Martha's Vineyard. You know, it rewards them with going even further into the United States than they would have on their own. You know, if on their own, they wouldn't have even gotten in. You know, so it's that's a problem for me. But it's just nice to tweak the liberals, you know, just to say, hey, you know, guess what we got? See, I wouldn't send 250.
Well, I guess he's saying, you know, we're not a sanctuary. We're not a sanctuary state. And here's the people that decided, this is where a lot of the people that decided to bring them into the country live. So, anyway. That's not what I'm here to talk about, but I do like the topic, and I wasn't really well-versed on it. I was listening there at the end. So sometimes you and I talk about topics ahead of time, but this week, again, one kept coming up in conversation. So, and then with my ladies group I lead, and we love this topic, and it's shame, body shame, and intimacy, and how do you move past that? It's epidemic. So we have toxic shame, which is kind of across all genders, and then body shame particular to women and what it does to intimate relationships, both the emotional intimacy and the physical intimacy. And we can make this as fun and lighthearted as possible. It sounds a little heavy, but the solutions and the tools
are serious.
Kind of lovely.
Yeah, but some things are serious and some things are funny, and we sort of have that interesting blend. You know, our report's almost like a romantic comedy in many ways because we do have bring every possible emotion to it. But body shame is interesting because I'm going to bring the guy perspective, and I'm curious the differences. But tell me what you talked about.
That's
tell me what the groups are saying.
I did a post on Facebook, and I remember you did comment. It wasn't exactly about. But it was about how does a woman feed herself and treat her body like an altar? What keeps the holy in a woman? And Greg, you commented a little pouty. It was cute. Men are always left out.
A little
and,
pouty?
That's what you always tell me. Well,
a little condescending,
a little
too,
pouty.
There, Dorothy. A little pouty.
A little pouty. Men don't. Men just have to work hard and shut up. But I'll tell
you just
Dorothy,
you just reinforced the stereotype. You just reinforced the stereotype. Women good, men are like a drone. You just reinforced it by saying I was pouty. Not that I had a valid criticism. Not that I had a good thought. Not that you honor my opinion. No, you said I was pouty. So, again, you're reinforcing the stereotype that women are holy and men shouldn't have an opinion on these things.
Greg, I'm teasing you because we're on the air. It's tongue-in-cheek. Your comment didn't say anything about my post. It just talked about how you were left out, which is fine. And I'm telling you, it started an avalanche of other men.
I did that right before the show.
Agreeing with you. And kind of, if y'all need to form your group, but maybe a group together. There's a lot of interesting comments about how the men saying, hey, what about us? And so anyway, it's kind of neat. So you know, maybe
I literally posted
that
right before the show, and I had to turn on the. I logged in. I had no idea, but there's a whole bunch of stuff there now. That's fascinating.
Well,
you've had
some other people chiming in and agreeing and feeling permission to say they feel left out also, which is kind of lovely.
Interesting.
So,
would the guys have said so if I hadn't started it? Do you think?
Well, I do tell my women this. So I do tell women when they speak up, when they use their voice. When they put their shoulders back, when they are happy and smile and choose lovely things for themselves, they give other women permission that we don't have in our culture. A lot of things we don't have permission for. It's like an unspoken thing. They give other women permission to also step into their power in all those ways and it's their pleasure. So I 100% believe that it takes one person sometimes to say something and then other people feel they have permission to say, wait a minute, I feel that way too. It's okay for me to feel this way. It's okay for me to say something.
Yeah. I don't worry about anybody else. I feel that's all the justification I need, but that's just me.
Yes. Well, that's who you are. And we definitely need those people for sure. So,
well, thank you.
The men are crying out for what makes us holy. So maybe we'll address that.
Yeah. We can start with women because it was your post on women that started it. So feel free to do both. Yeah, we got time.
So shame and intimacy. Let's start chatting about this and then just see where it goes. But I wanted to mention there's something called the first offense, which I think is a really lovely starting point. Mm-hmm. And this is time in a child's life where they get the feeling or the sense or the message that their body is somehow, there's something negative, shameful, or there's a judgment passed on their body. And everyone has a first defense, and your listeners can reflect what theirs might have been. And full disclosure, I'm a movement guide teacher. I help them move through shame and move into their femininity. And my founder and my mentor is Sheila Kelly, and she discusses the first defense. And so I'm kind of quoting her on that one. Her words sometimes are a little different than mine, but just to give her full honor. But you can reflect the time that you first learned that your body was not okay, whether you're being told to suck your stomach in or, you know, oh my goodness, you're always falling down. You have all those scabs on your knees. Let's cover those up.
Yeah,
it can be little things.
They're covered up for infection. I thought they were badges of honor. Well, here's a question for you. When do you first realize you have a body?
Obviously, if a child has scabby knees and you say, oh my goodness, you've been playing so hard. Do those hurt?
Yep.
You're okay. Well, let's cover them up with a Band-Aid so they don't get infected. That's not shaming. It's the tone and the message that something about you, something about you're doing with your body, you need to stop this to please me, even though there's no benefit to stopping this really, or, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that's the question I had, though. It's just, I think of being a kid, when do you first realize that you have a body, that you have a body that's yours? You know, at what point do people individualize? I mean, I don't think kids think about it, you know, when they're 1, 2, 3, but somewhere along the way, 3 or 4, they sort of realize that when you realize I'm a person, you also realize I have a body.
Mm-hmm.
When is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a time in early childhood development, and that's not my forte, where this tiny child begins to realize they are separate from their mother, that they are not their mother. There's a point in time in early childhood where they literally feel that they are their mother, especially if the mother is attached and she's an attached parent breastfeeding. And there's a time when that sinks in. And then there's another time later. I mean, there's all these developmental stages of separation, which when you see behavioral problems with children sometimes, that's what's going on. They're going to this developmental, right? You probably know about this developmental time where they're understanding more and more their separation and their own responsibility and power and all these things. But
that's when you realize you have to realize your body before you can realize body shaming. In other words, you have to have an opinion of yourself already, because you can't shame somebody that doesn't think they know who they are. That's why I want to start kind of at the beginning of the story. That's my logic behind it.
And children aren't really thinking about too much at all. They come into the world loving themselves. I mean, if there's an attached adult mirroring for them and responding appropriately to their needs, there's not body shame. There's not. If you go, you know, you can go to European countries and go to the beaches. The children are running naked up until age 7, 8, 9 on the beach without a thought. And nobody has a thought of it. And here you're covering up. Okay, careful, cover up. Oh, you know, no, get changed behind here. Oh, my goodness. I mean, little kids you can see in this country are, you'll see little kids hiding their bodies, afraid to be seen. It's a very interesting phenomenon. Not that there's a should or shouldn't about this, but it's interesting to observe. What do we teach at an early age in this country? And then look at our adults. So what do we teach at an early age? What do we teach when we're adding sexual education in their bodies? And how do our adults faring? How are adults faring in intimate relationships? How is the body posture? The signs of body shame, the signs of shame, you know,
what
can we see them?
What are they?
Well, my favorite one is the hunched shoulders, and I'm going to say it, I'm going to just say it, in white women especially, white middle-class women, the hunched shoulders, the covering the heart chakra, the closing of the throat, the voice.
Enough anyway in this society, because there's already a stigma against being white. Kids are being taught, and it's worse for the younger kids. So you've got young girls to young women who are immediately, they're already, you know, they feel some kind of problem of being white. So once you're already on the shame circle, you know, if they're ashamed
of
being white, then they're...
This goes way back.
Oh, okay. So why white women?
That's fairly new. Yes, we're adding to the problem, obviously. Our culture isn't one that's going to encourage us to be empowered. That's why you and I are here, to share messages otherwise. But the white-black thing, I don't know. If you start observing and you kind of are close with African-American families or even Latina families, you'll notice there's a different attitude towards the body and towards womanhood and towards curves. and a little more matriarchal possibly in some ways regarding the home life.
Do white women have more anorexia, for example? Do white women have more eating disorders?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. The messaging they get growing up, perfectionism, your body is something to be embarrassed of and cover up and not talk about. If we're going to approach the topic, we're going to do it formally and in sort of circles, not really directly. You can tell by my posture as a mother that I'm in my attitude when certain topics come up that I'm horrified by them. Therefore, they must be horrific topics. But I am human and I have those topics where we're horrified about that we can't talk about or part of who I am. Therefore, something about me is sort of horrific. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just kind of a ongoing cycle here. I think it's getting better. So the signs, you asked the signs of sexual shame. So just a general insecurity with the self. There's a new topic we've touched on 1 week called vulvar insecurity, very real, sort of promoted by porn, that the vulva has to be perfect and look like this. And there's
this
a real phenomenon of vulvar insecurity, and like the money behind the plastic surgeries is through the roof.
Nose jobs for 16-year-olds. I mean, they're girls getting plastic surgery at ridiculously young ages.
Yeah, my girlfriend is 47, and she had one at 16. This was the Jewish community in California, though. I think there's probably some areas of the country where that's more prevalent. Apparently, it was very common. It's like what a lot of girls will get for their – and I don't want to speak to that community. That's not my community. I don't want to offend anyone. But having personal experience and a lot of friends, that it's not unusual for the – 16th birthday, not
get your
not
nose
rare.
Job. Hey, listen, I got a huge nose. Noses are cool. Women, leave your nose alone. You'll be better off. You'll breathe better.
Yeah.
You'll sing better.
I think Barbara Streisand,
leave your nose alone.
They thought about doing her nose at one point. She was encouraged to get her nose done, Barbara Streisand. And, I guess she was very glad she didn't because her voice became one of the most famous of our last
it's just fabulous
century.
Voice. Her politics suck, but her voice is unbelievable. Yeah, but the voice comes through the nose. I mean, it just does.
Yeah.
Any opera singer, you don't see opera singers getting nose jobs. Okay, don't do it. Stop doing stuff like that. Stop screwing your body up, people.
Yeah, because you never know what you're intended to be.
But
so,
even if you don't, I've got a large cavernous nose, and I'm sure it resonates with my voice and my radio voice. You know, if I get a nose job, you think, I come in here like this. Welcome to Action Radio. I mean, that'd be stupid.
Yeah, we can't really hear you. We can't really.
I'd lose all effect.
I don't
if I didn't
really
have
believe
my
in what you're saying with that
nose
voice.
Radio voice. Yeah, exactly. I'd my nose radio. But I can. That's the echo chamber, folks. That's your sinuses. Your whole nose, sinus, throat, mouth cavity. That's where your voice comes from. Especially when you speak like that, down deep, the resonant voice, the diaphragm voice. I mean, I couldn't do that if I had a nose job.
Well, okay, so we have the physical stature, the slunched shoulders, the sort of, not making eye contact with others, and then the voice. So a constricted voice, feeling like your voice isn't important. When we do breath work or before we start our movement practice, sometimes we'll intentionally take a deep breath and make that with a lion's breath that they do in yoga, and it'll be interesting how many of us have a catch. Like there's a catch when we try to do that. And a body,
what's
a somatic therapist, like a little catch in the voice, like you, like when you try to make that, and that's interesting. And some somatic therapists might say, and they would, and energy workers, that is, an indication that there's something you're not speaking about, something very important in your life. You're not talking about something that you're afraid to be open about. Your voice isn't. Your throat chakra is closed, so it's interesting.
Okay. Yeah. We need to do a whole thing on chakras because they fascinate me and as they relate to, your specialties in particular. But I want to get to our Wild Women of Wellness on Wednesday to look into this as well because the whole Eastern,
night,
Western. Yeah, go ahead.
Last night I taught my movement practice and I have an amazing group of women and we fire up that root chakra. We are working with some magic sexual manifestation energy. By the time we're finished with class, we do a gratitude prayer at the end and we actually send the energy we've created into manifestation and I'm telling you it works. It's amazing. It's very sacred.
So you all go and have great sex that night or what?
Well, I mean, you can do that also. That's another way to honor the divine with a consecrated sexual act, but we're moving, we're dancing, we're moving our feminine bodies, we're shaking it, you know?
I wish I could be in that class. Sounds like fun. But I'd probably ruin the whole dynamic, but I could,
well,
you know, honor my
Well, we can't have a masculine
movement.
Energy in because it has to be a safe place for women, and we have some women that come in working on things, working on some trauma every now and then, but it'd be great to have a masculine energy class. It would look different, it would feel different, and it would be amazing.
Be interesting, yeah. Guys, yeah. If you want to improve your lines, you know, say to your woman partner, you know, I want to honor your body. I mean, it might work, you never know. I'm digressing.
Well, hopefully you mean it, you know?
Well, of course. Why would I say something I didn't
mean? When we honor each other, the sex gets really good. Okay, so sign of sexual pain, problems in the sack, sexual dysfunction,
right.
Dissatisfaction. You know, if you have a shame, a toxic shame or a sexual body shame. I mean, toxic shame is kind of a general shame, right, that seeps into every aspect of your life. But a body shame or sexual shame, you know, can be limited, you know, not entirely, but it can be, you know, more about, you know, in the bedroom kind of affecting. And so less ability to get turned on, less tuned into your own sexual feelings, less ability to be uninhibited, to connect, to feel safe with your partner, even if they are a safe place, and of course, reduced orgasm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking of something. Can you be critical of something? Like I'm trying to lose some weight. I mean, it's ever since heart surgery, I gained a huge amount of weight. I'm still not sure of the whole physical reason for it. No one's been able to explain it to me, but I've never been ashamed of that, you know, and I'm critical of it because I want to improve it. And I'm still working through the intermittent fasting as much as possible and those kind of things. So I'm working on it, but I'm not ashamed of it, but I'm still critical. So where does that line cross between
different.
I don't like this about me and I'm trying to change it, or I just don't like this about me, to I'm ashamed of this. I want to hide this.
So
I feel guilty about it. Okay.
Yeah. So the difference is that something is inherent. The feeling of shame is something that's inherently, that there's something inherently wrong with you on a you level, like on a deep level, but it's not this problem I'm addressing. I am in control of this problem. I am going to take steps to change it. And it doesn't really mean I'm a bad or good person or something's really wrong with me. It's just, this is what's going on. I'm going to fix it. I don't like it.
Okay.
I'm going to fix it. I want to be better versus in every cell of my being, I feel unworthy of love.
Oh yeah. That's the difference.
All
right.
Yeah.
That's pretty clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I see it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, obviously trouble with intimacy and relationships, shame shuts you down emotionally and you form walls. And there's just a fear of intimacy, a fear of being vulnerable. Mm-hmm.
What do you do if a person, and we're talking about women here, but if a woman is ashamed of some part of her, that's going to be the dominant thing with her partner. She's going to be living in fear. I'm just guessing here, so you have to let me know.
Yeah.
Is that woman living in fear that the shame will be reinforced, that it'll be noticed, that it won't be countered by something that the guy says to counter that shame so she doesn't have to feel shame? There's a lot of dynamics here that require the other person. So what position
exactly
is the partner in? You know, the partner's now responsible for that shame too, because he or she can either enforce it, reinforce it, dispel it, get, you know, counter it. I mean, there's all kinds of options here, but this is the whole partnership. You know, you've already got a disadvantage going in, and so something's going to happen. It's either going to be increased, in which case, you know, your love life's over, you know, for temporarily or however long, or you can say, you know, or the person's brave enough to say, I'm ashamed of this. This is part of me. And the partner says, yeah, it's nothing. Don't worry about it. You look great to me. You know, I mean,
I think you have different levels. So I think you can have someone who comes in with such severe shame that they're untouchable. I mean, for now, they have to go on their own and do work before entering relationship, right? That's going to go anywhere.
Okay.
Or it's just going to be a shit show, essentially. But, and then there's, you know, different levels of shame. So if I have done my work and I know I have shame issues that I haven't fully worked through, then my partner's responses and words and responses to me and actions, I understand I have a discolored lens. So I'm going to be, if I start to feel that
What's
feeling,
that mean?
So I've done my work. So
What's
I
a discolored
start to,
lens?
So if I, well, meaning I'm seeing through a lens, a cracked lens, right? I'm not seeing his actions, his words, his responses to me. I'm aware because I've done my work that sometimes I can see his behavior through a cracked lens, a lens that isn't accurate. It's not what he's trying to do, say, or communicate, right? So I'm aware of that. I've done my work. Is it perfect? No. But again, if we've decided that in this relationship, we're going to have honest communication, even if it's ugly sometimes, even if it's scary, even if it's, which is a huge step. So again, different levels coming into the relationship. If you've done no work and you've had a traumatic childhood with an alcoholic parent and a parent that's emotionally neglectful, and you've jumped relationship to relationship and they're all a disaster, and the chance of you coming in and being able to, you know, on your own.
Well, you're just maintaining the pattern at that point. You know, you're not curing the problem. You're maintaining the pattern. And
right.
so you have to see the pattern to break the pattern, though.
Yes. Well, you have to listen. And I guess we're prayerful people here. So for me, one of the key components that I wasn't going to mention, but I will now, is finding your divine source creator, your God. And that is part of the process, like realizing you've been through this and you need help, calling on help from a higher source, calling on help from friends, doing the work, researching, you know, reading the books. There's a beautiful book on toxic shame. And I mean, there's Sheila Kelly has written a book. Regina Thomas Tower has written some beautiful books about the feminine and coming into your own divine feminine. It's a beautiful and it's fun to do. And it doesn't have to be hours and hours and years of therapy. That being said, so you were asking what's the guy supposed to do if it's the woman? And again, all these shame things can talk about are both gender, are all the genders. So this is not limited to one gender. But
you haven't gotten man shame yet, but we should. Yeah.
Well, shame is across the board. I talk more when we talk about the signs of sexual shame. This is for women and men, but
okay.
In relationships, so it's conversation. It's coming in with a certain level of having done your own work, and then being able to constantly remind yourself when those feelings come up that you have a cracked lens and asking for clarification. It feels like you're saying this. It feels like you're telling me this. Is this what you're trying to say? And then being able to believe them. I mean, you know. It's pretty huge, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
makes sense.
So another sign of sexual shame, being uncomfortable talking about sex. So not being able to even discuss anything sexual. And again, children pick up.
Try it on this show,
easily.
Folks. Give us a call. You'll be honest. Pick a name. We don't care. You know, and I would love that. Try your hand at talking to us. You know, so feel free.
Any question goes. I love it when we do sex ed and there's a jar in the middle of the room. Mm-hmm. And at the end of class, you know, I tell all the kids, pull out a little piece of paper. I give them a piece of paper. I say, write down any question. I don't care what it is. And everyone has to put one in the jar. That way, if you don't actually have one, you just put a piece of paper. And
that way there's no shame.
There's no shame. That's right. And it's amazing what comes up with the questions kids have. And why aren't kids talking to their parents? Because they sense immediately that the parents are uncomfortable. And there's a little clue here and there when the topics come up as the children are growing up and topics about the body or sexuality come up and they can read on the parent's face and by the parent's response that it's really uncomfortable. So parents need to do their own work, really.
You got to get past that. I just want to mention, too, we have live chat if anybody wants to type in a message. But if you're listening to podcasts, of course, it's not available. That's why you want to always listen live when you can, so you can type in messages or call us. To get talking to my kid, we used to play a game called Sex or Drugs, and we listened to popular music. And, you know, the first person that could identify whether the – she was like 12, 13 – whatever it was, 11 years old, somewhere in there. But this is just fun. And you want a great way to talk to your kid. This worked for me. And because, you know, we're joking about it. Because when you can joke about stuff, then you can talk about it. Yeah, we had our serious chats, of course. But, you know, but listen to the lyrics of a song. And one of us would scream out, sex, drugs, you know. And it was really a great way to get conversations going. And then you realize how much of it's in popular culture. You know, the song, your favorite lyrics, you think it means this. I just found out that James Taylor, who was singing on the White House lawn during Brandon's little inflation chat, you know, Fire and Rain. I didn't know that was about heroin and suicide. I had no clue. I didn't listen to lyrics.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Unless they were announcing that on the news, they probably got from some, biography or something like that. But James Taylor, yeah, it's a great song. I've sung it myself, you know, walking down the street. I've seen fire and I've seen rain. I wasn't thinking suicide and heroin.
I never really knew what that meant. I never really knew what he was talking about.
I didn't
about.
Either. But if that's what it means, but this is the thing, but
depressing.
This is where popular lyrics, but it's an interesting thing. There's so much woven into these things and you can go through most popular songs and they're either about sex or about drugs. And why is that? I don't know, but it's a great way to get your kid talking. I'll tell you that. Sorry, I digressed a bit.
I think that's a great tool. I'm the one that during movies, I agree with you 100% that the messaging from our culture is some of the most damaging messaging of all. I mean, parents can contribute, but our culture mm-hmm. intentionally seems to give kids yeah. the message, sex and love is painful and have lots of sex and be sexy, but mm-hmm. love is torturous and always dramatic. And
yep.
So when we watch movies, I'm like, I talk constantly, which I think is crazy. I call out, what do you think they're trying to say here? Oh, is that real? What do you think she would have done in real life? Do you think that would actually work?
Yeah.
You know, like I
think they would use birth control,
to...
you know, or just, you know, done it
right.
like they did in the movies, you know, I mean, yeah. But this is, but kids, you know, it's amazing. I think parents so underestimate their kids, just to digress a little bit further. Kids are at a level far beyond where you think they are. And if you want to find out, just ask them, you know, what's on your mind? They'll tell you, you know. And so it can be really fun to talk about this stuff once you get past your own restrictions. I think parents are more embarrassed for their kids. I don't want to talk about that with my kid. You know, they might think badly of me. It's like, no, they won't. Believe me, they're grateful for the knowledge. They're grateful for the fact that they can talk to you. And you do a little joking thing like, you know, playing sex or drugs with the songs on the radio. That really opens things up. And you do the same thing in movies. And then, as you say, you realize how pervasive these messages are. And that opens the door for them to talk about any message they might be getting from, you know, from school, from media, from movies, from stuff they're reading, from anywhere. You know, so now that I think about it, there's a lot of benefits to this. But that would not only work for kids. I'm sure that works for adults, too, you know, in groups that you're leading. You know, do you realize all the messages? This is a message. This is designed to get you to buy X. This has nothing to do with you or your body. This is using you and your body and how you feel about your body to sell whatever. Blue
yeah.
things.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever
Viagra, diet pills.
Yeah, well, I wasn't thinking of that, but just, yeah, I just made a, you know, generic. Yeah, Viagra. Yeah. Well, let's get into the men for a second here because we're sort of over our halfway point. So mm-hmm. what are the guys? What are guys, I mean, other than the obvious man part issue, what are guys ashamed of?
I mean,
too
any
short.
Child that grows yeah. up, any child that grows up in a family where the parents are emotionally handicapped or not
mm-hmm.
present or on drugs or alcohol, I mean, it doesn't matter the gender of the child.
Right.
You know, any time a child feels that they're not enough or that they're not lovable who they are, that something is inherently wrong with them, which is, you know, as you know, children interpret a lot of things as having exactly to do with them. A lot of time,
mm-hmm.
you know, when parents are having issues and unable to handle things appropriately, children interpret it as being about them, right? And
yeah, see, I never thought that. My parents were really basket cases in so many ways, but I never took it. I mean, I felt responsible for their problems, but I never thought it was my fault. Because I learned very early, you want to talk about separating? Very early, I separated from them that I have my person, my body, my thoughts, my beliefs, and they have theirs. You know, they're still parents, so I have to bring them up properly. I mean, just how warped I was. But I never took it on that I never considered their divorce my fault. I never considered their emotional, you know, childishness my fault. I mean, I never considered a lot of things my fault, even though I had to deal with it. So I figured I was more on the parent side. I took it more as a responsibility, but not as my fault, which is probably just as bad psychologically. But, you know, that might be something to talk about, too.
I feel like there is an inherent resilience in some people, like a survivorship quality. And,
mm-hmm.
again, this isn't my specialty, really, but it
no.
seems like there is, like, you can take, you know, five children and put them all in the same situation, and you're going to have different responses. You'll have general tendencies, but, you know, obviously different.
Yeah, two become addicts, one commits suicide, and one says, ah, you're all nuts.
Yeah, one does just fine, and one actually thrives, almost like they needed that upbringing for some reason, too. Mm-hmm.
What doesn't kill you makes you stronger? Or are we quoting Nietzsche now?
Yeah, I think there's a resilience gene, probably, you know, honestly.
That would be interesting to find out, because we've talked about this before. You've mentioned that about me before. And I agree with you. I mean, I think I wouldn't
mm-hmm.
be here if I wasn't resilient just because of, you know, a lot that's happened. I read a fascinating book, Anodia Judith, Eastern Body, Western Mind. It's one of the very few books.
I have
actually,
that in my drawer. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's a fabulous book. I had a feeling you would. That's why
I
mentioned it.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, yeah, it's one of the best. It explains so much to me about psychology and chakras, and this is why I like talking about this kind of stuff. I need to go back and read it again. It's one of, like, the five most significant books in my life. And what I found fascinating about it was when she talks about suicide, and she talks about all the reasons that people commit suicide. And I'm thinking to myself, that's it? You commit suicide for that? Hell, that was, like, you know, three times a week for me. You know,
and
suicide never occurred to me, never has. Because I got too many things, you know, as I say, you know, you get to write the chapters, not the ending. That's how your life goes. So write the chapters. and keep writing the chapters as long as you can. Write as many chapters as you can, but you know, the ending's not up to you. That's God's department, not mine. But when I read those stories of why people committed suicide, and I'm thinking to myself, that was my first reaction. That's it. That's the reason you ended your life for that, whatever that was. I'm thinking to myself, that's nothing, you know. And some of them were pretty bad, but a lot of them were very, very easily solvable, you know, if you had any survivor instincts at all. And I have a feeling mine are pretty strong, obviously, because you mentioned it a few times, and I don't think I'd be here without them. And now it's the point where I have no fear of starting something completely new that no one's ever tried. That doesn't bother me in the slightest. In fact, to me, I couldn't imagine not doing this. But that's got to – is that genetic? Or is that if you have enough challenges early enough before you realize that you can end it all or not participate – that you develop a survivor instinct, and then by the time you realize that there are ways that you could end it all or not participate or completely duck out or go into drugs and alcohol, that you've already got the survivor instinct, because before you knew you had a choice, you figured it out.
I have a feeling it's multifactorial. I have a feeling there's a genetic component based on personality. And I have a feeling it's also, we know that if the child has at least one connected, supportive adult, one, doesn't even matter, that jumps the chance of them being a survivor. And then I believe in the spirituality/energetic component also, that we come into this earth realm with a mission and with a certain karmic past also, and that affects what our pathway is up to a certain point. So
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense. I don't argue with everything
you
said.
We can talk about tools.
It's like you're waiting for my argument. I don't argue with everything.
No, I'm sometimes just letting the pause happen. Yeah.
And I got to go over that too. That's you want to talk about something that I need to get over? It pauses. As the host of this little enterprise, I feel a compulsion to fill space. So if there isn't space, I'm not good at thinking for a few seconds. I'm just not. So my apologies to everybody. We have one of our, Brianna, one of our younger reporters. She'll do that. She likes to think like 2 or 3 seconds. And I've learned that I have to wait those 2 or 3 seconds. Otherwise, we start walking on each other. And it's just a radio thing. You know, here's something that I'm ingrained with. No dead air, no open space. You know, you got to fill sound.
Isn't that interesting?
Like,
is that what they tell you?
Yeah, they do. They actually do. Yeah, that's
a
radio thing. And so I've gotten over that most of the time, but there are times when I'm thinking, and I'm getting good at letting it go, but, you know, too many seconds, I'm thinking, we can't just pause here. And not because everybody's going to turn us off and leave. Yeah.
This is a phenomenon and a belief system that crosses a lot of aspects of our culture, I believe, the disability to pause and breathe. And I will relate it back to my movement practice when we teach. So the reason I don't love my women to free dance or even move on the pole early on in our movement practice.
You
like
have
stand
a pole.
The floor.
You have a pole.
That comes later. That comes later. It's a
you know,
framework for the feminine. Well, it's a framework for the feminine body. It's a place to take the energy. We create a ton of energy. It gets really fun. And later on, the women want somewhere fun to play. So we reclaim the pole. It's no longer a symbol of victimization, inequality, and a desperation for money. It is a symbol of a woman's playground. So that's another topic. But
well, it's like gymnastics equipment. So, I mean, what's it? You know, why would the pole be any different? Yeah. Okay.
Exactly, because our culture said it was. And so anyway, we reclaimed it, and we have like housewives and Christians and all the ladies having lots of fun. But what I was going to say is, one of the huge challenges when my women are newer to me is getting them to slow the F down, not move to the beat of the music. And I'm going to say I don't want to be, you know, again, here we're going to talk about masculine, feminine. Moving to the beat is masculine. Bump, bump, bump. Walking really on the beat. You know, everything but lined up, everything moving forward. There's a goal. We're going to the goal. Moving in a circuitous way to the beat of your own like desire, your own intuition, is extremely feminine. So what I do, how we practice this, is we actually move on our breath and we ignore the beat of the music. And in order to facilitate that at first, I play a lot of music that actually has no beat. It's very slow and ethereal, because what happens when you introduce a beat too early is we're so used to it that all of a sudden their movement becomes on the beat, and it's no longer this embodied, intuitive, sort of flowing. It's really interesting. So when you talk about filling dead space on the radio, my thought was, gosh, what if we practiced intentionally pausing and taking a breath, you know?
Well, if we pause too long, then the automated equipment deletes that part. It's kind of interesting.
Really?
Times when, my microphone was shut down and I didn't know it, or I'd muted myself and I'm the only one talking. Yeah, that gets cut out. It's kind of, it's actually a good thing, though, because nobody
What if we breathe really loud, like, then maybe.
Well, they know it's a sex report, that's for sure.
I don't know. Just throwing out ideas. But the pause.
No, actually, no.
Yeah, the pause is the feminine, I'll be honest.
It's a good
idea.
Space,
here's the space to be filled. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But here's what's interesting. I think guys, just as guys like to fix things, guys like to fill spaces. Guys, you know, if something's missing, it's like the brick in the wall.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they'll look at the missing brick. They won't look at the wall. You know, and
isn't
so that's
that
a,
true?
That's a guy thing, yeah. And I think guys being more team-oriented, guys play on sports teams. Guys join the Boy Scouts. Guys join the military. I mean, women do too. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that the guys, you know, are more used to a hierarchical team environment on the football team. Corporations that are run mostly by men are very hierarchical, very team-oriented. You're part of the team. We wear white shirts. We work out together. We show up at work at the same time. We have lunch at the same time, and we go home at the same time. It's very much of a team thing. So if you relate that to music, you know, most of the people who play in rock bands are guys. I know. I've met most of them, you know, so in this area in California.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if you're going to play in a band, you have to have a beat. Otherwise, people, it sounds like crap. So there are times that you want a beat for consistency when you want to work as a team. And there are times when you want to be completely individual. And as they say, march to your own drummer. So that would be – so individually – you can march whatever time you want. You can make up your own time. But if you're in a band, or if you're on a team, or with another person, there's a kind of a beat to that interaction with the other person. There's a pace. There's a setting. There's a, what is it, Ravel's Bolero, you know, the sex symphony. It's supposed to be based on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it has a beat
symphony.
To it. But if you listen to it, the beat is almost indistinguishable in the beginning of the song. I didn't think of this till just now. The beat gradually increases all the way through the song. Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
How's that for a thought?
Mm.
Mm.
It's interesting. It's great noticing. Makes
the things
you
we come up with on
the
show, it's just, yeah. And these are things that I don't think of until we talk about them. Because I know Ravel's Bolero, I've listened to it. You know, whatever that song was that they played, the movie 10, I think they played over and over again. Ravel's Bolero, oh boy, it's a sex symphony. You know, but then you think about it. And then I thought about it, well, wait a minute. I know in the beginning it's real quiet, and it's not very... you know, it's like some of the Beethoven symphonies sometimes. They'll start off, the middle movements will be kind of disjoint, and then you have instruments here and instruments there, and then you get to the end, and it's like everybody's, you know, cascading, crunching together. It's like, oh, that's interesting. You know, listen to Beethoven's Fifth sometime, and the first one everybody knows, bum, 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 bum. But the middle movements are quite different.
Completely different feeling. Like Vivaldi does this too. Mm-hmm.
Oh. Beautiful stuff.
Let's talk about, so what do we do about it, right? So we all have a first offense. It's very rare that someone doesn't have a first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth offense. That stuff sits in the body. So through somatic movement therapy, we do move through that stuck emotion. It tends to stick for women, it sticks in the hips. And a lot of women
that
go to yoga will find that they can't stop crying when they do the hip openers. And that'll be like a new phenomenon. Why is that? Great. I don't know. Energy sticks in the body in certain places. So I am a believer in that when you have a physical problem, unless you can – a lot of people have mysterious physical problems that can't ever figure it out, right? And chiropractors are beautiful for helping. But lots of times it's an energetic thing that's stuck. And so you have to work on, you know, what happened emotionally that never got moved through. And that's trauma therapy. Gosh, there's a great book you know, I'll post it on the webpage, Your Body Speaks Your Mind by Shapiro, that touches on this, that I recommend for everybody. So, so moving through this, so movement therapy is beautiful. Music therapy, you were talking about music. If you are somebody
therapy to me,
feels
you're just regular. Yeah.
Yes.
We have a caller, by the way,
not
too,
everyone feels emotion when they listen to music, but a lot
How can
of people
you not?
Do. So, I know, but there are people who really just, don't. They're very, you've met people that have certain musical taste where it seems like it's kind of very, kind of monotonous, and maybe music you might characterize
chamber
as not
music.
A lot of thought,
oh,
thought going
God,
on.
God, I hate chamber
funny.
Music. Yeah.
Oh, were my father alive right now, he would love this conversation. He conducted
okay.
a chamber orchestra. But
they occasionally, but
no.
Yeah, just for the most part, it's boring. Give me a symphony. Give me a symphony. Give
no,
me.
He loved opinions, though, so he would love any opinion. He doesn't need you to
okay.
have an opinion, so he loves the discussions. He was a fun guy, but.
Yep. Hey, you
want
to take a call?
Anyway.
We got a caller. You want to take a call?
Let's do it. Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah. Now, again, because like I said, I've got phone numbers down. So if it's a good call, then you'll stick around. If it's a bad call, this will be your last time on the show. So I always give that caution for new people. So you just heard the word unmute. That is you. So welcome to Action Radio with Dorothy and me. What's on your mind?
Hi. How are you?
Having fun. Who are you? First name,
hello.
Where are you calling from?
This is Marcus calling from Detroit. How are you doing
Hi, Marcus.
Today?
Having
hello,
a great time.
Marcus.
Well, really loving the show. I just wanted to say, I have a really big cock and I can suck it. And if you two want
to
get
oh,
in
it's
on it,
so
too,
nice to yeah. See, and this is
it's
now you go on
the
ban list,
is,
and now you'll never be on my
well,
show again.
Is,
you'll never
so
be on again.
But it's so inoffensive. It's so inoffensive because.
And why would somebody do that? Let's analyze Marcus and his impression of himself.
Hold on. I did my senior high school. This is so freakazoid that I'm going to share that I did my senior high school. I was in home economics and I did my paper on sexual fetishes. I don't know why. Who was I? I was such a strange child, but I loved it. So that kind of call bothers me zero because the sexual fetishes is when, you know, you can only get aroused by this act, whatever you do. It's different than a desire, a kink, a little fantasy. It's something you literally cannot get an erection without this thing present. So when he called, my first thing I thought of was, oh, frotcherism, you know, or
that's again? What's that
exposure.
Word?
Well, or someone who exposes themselves. So like, you know, a lot of women have had the experience, and probably men too, I think probably more women, where someone just suddenly pulls out their penis in public, like only so they can only see it, or, you know, will like show it in the car and like pretend they're masturbating, you know, get the woman's eye contact somewhere and then suddenly expose themselves. Right. And it turns them on. And it's people do this in a serial way. Like there'll be serial exhibitionists. Right. And they love the shock and the, it's like the shoplifter, you know, that thrill will I get caught, right? A shoplifter isn't doing it to get stuff usually. I mean, some might be, a few, but really when it becomes a chronic thing, it's like an addiction to that. It's like gambling, an addiction to that
but
feeling.
But I even told him,
that feeling
he knows he's never going to be back on. I've got his number recorded, unless he calls him from a different number, which people do occasionally. But for the most part, he knows that was it.
But
you
it's
know,
a
and
sex
get...
show. And it's a sex show. And he wanted to talk about what would happen if he and you and me had a threesome, and he was talking about oral sex, oral pleasure. None of these things are off topic. I mean, they're not. This is part of our show. It doesn't bother me. But I don't think he genuinely wanted to discuss oral sex and threesomes, which I'm happy to do. It's not my personal bag.
Well,
but
he's very
self-centered.
He only talks about himself.
Right. So do we actually want an intimate relationship with him? I don't think we do. But
no, I'd point and laugh.
Call?
So that's it, dude? That's all you got? So no one is going
to
want you, pal.
That call is a desire to – he's looking for an outlet to shock and titillate himself. And like a daring thing, he probably gave him an erection when he called. And, you know, I'd say we could maybe put it in the category. I mean, I can't psychoanalyze him completely, but.
Oh, of course we can. We got 5 minutes.
But, you know, he might be very titillated with himself right now and very proud of himself. So we have.
Well, he stood up. He just laughed.
Generated
so he was
pleasure.
Listening to our criticism.
Your listeners are laughing.
Yeah.
We're
yeah.
laughing. He's turned
yep.
on himself. He feels brave. Mm. Maybe his mm. life stinks and he hates his job and he doesn't have a relationship and now he feels brave and hilarious. So all good things are happening here.
And here's
maybe
the good news.
For the next show.
That's
going to
be on forever.
Reason.
Yeah, that's going to be podcast forever, dude. So everybody's going to know you're an idiot, which is kind of funny.
Or he just doesn't know how to talk about sexuality. So people have different skill levels, right? And, you know,
well, that's
like
definitely
we have
a different skill level.
Well, children. So children might come to you and say, I hate you, mommy. You're a horrible, ugly, blah, blah, blah. And I can either say, oh, my God, you hate me and I'm horrible and ugly. Or I can say, okay, wait a minute. This is a child. This child has a need. Usually it's power or attention. Those are the two human needs that go missing that cause bad behavior the most. Essentially, it's love. But if you break it down further, you know, power and attention, right? Okay. So
I got another call. Do you think this is Marcus from Detroit
like
back on another line? Do you think he's on his landline this time? So I will give the same warning
I
gave before. Well, we're going to find out in a second because, first of all, this is an adult portion of the show, you know, so this is not such a big deal. So I'll give you the same warning. If you're a good call, you'll be back, and we'd love to have you on.
Well,
if you're a bad
never.
Call, like 5 seconds, and you'll never be heard from again.
And maybe a spanking. Ooh.
Hey, show your titties. Show those titties off.
We got another one. That's
Would
a different
you
voice.
Know, is that a good one or a bad one?
I don't know, but we're going to put him on the ban list, too. You know,
oh, okay.
I mean,
I
we like
sure
to have intelligent
how are we categorizing good and bad?
people that, if they have the intentions of either giving us decent information, requesting information, if they have something useful to offer the show, then they can stay. But, not this guy.
Yeah, we've never taken calls before. So
we've never had calls before. This has been you and me talking. So, and I know you have friends that you've talked to that on Facebook, you've encouraged people to call. I've encouraged people to call. And I think what we might have to do is have them go to the live chat and actually explain what they want to talk about. But even then, that's no guarantee. At some point soon, as the show grows, and we are growing like crazy, I'm going to have a call screener, and it's going to be a little bit tougher for those folks to get through. But even then, you know, my ban list is growing, and we have two more additions to it today. I've recorded every call I've ever gotten. And they don't get on until I record the number, so that's never a problem.
I feel like the general topics we talk about are going to, you know, people are very shy about sexuality. Normal people with normal brains and behaviors, whatever normal means, tend to be shy. So if we have callers calling, you know. I think that it would definitely need a screener for this topic and this subject.
Apparently, we're going to have to. I'm going to be more careful. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the U.S. is not a healthy country sexually, as evidenced by the callers. So.
And they sound like young men, though. So, they sounded like maybe 20s, 30s.
Right. So the desire to talk about sexuality and be okay sexually, I think men are very confused, young men. And they're not really given permission to come into their sexuality and be sexual and also be honored. There's a lot of shame, as we talked about, for men. And, you know, I wonder if in another country you would get calls like that. I kind of think you wouldn't. I think it might be a U.S. thumb. I think it goes back to shaming, sexual shaming, and allowing perversions to be brought to the media and sexual messages that aren't inaccurate. When true healthy sexual messages that are supposed to be given by parents and teachers, the parents and teachers are either unable to or their hands are tied, right?
Huh.
And so the kids are learning from porn and movies, and you end up with your young male callers that just called, and this is what they have to offer, right? This is what they have to offer.
Yeah, that's kind of wild.
And now we have women trying to date them. We have young women trying to date them. I mean, how is that going? You know?
Hey, guys, you're not going to get women talking like that, okay? I'm here to tell you it's not going to work because you're basically boorish Neanderthal clods. It ain't going to happen, you know?
Well,
idiots.
It's more like
I have another one. One more.
There's a deep-held attitude about sexuality that you're hearing from these callers, and this is one of the problems.
Yeah. We must have found a chat line or something. I guess someone found out that we do a sex chat, you know, sex and sensuality, and they didn't get to the sensuality part. They're still on the sex part. This is as far as they've gotten.
Isn't that it? Well, I mean, people are obsessed with it because they don't know what to do. You know, they really don't know who they are and they don't know what to do. And
wild.
I do have only 3 or 4 minutes, Greg. I've got a hard stop just at 11 or after due to family
let's
needs.
Tell our new caller to go to live chat, 505 area code, go to live chat and tell us your first name, your location, and what you want to talk about, and we might let you on the show. But we've already had 2 bad calls. I assume this one's going to be just as bad. So feel free to tell us who you are, where you are, and I've already got your number, so it doesn't matter. I'll see that you've called before, and if Dorothy has a minute to talk to you, then we might consider. Otherwise, given the past 2 callers, I don't think this one's going to be any different.
Well, and
Dorothy,
I want to touch on healing shame before I have to get off, because all I've talked about is movement practice, moving through it, and trauma release. But I think also acknowledging when there is a feeling, an unpleasant feeling after someone says something or does something, and you have to just be aware of what does it feel like in your body, and being aware of that feeling and getting quiet, right? We talked about creating space. Take that breath. Try to mm-hmm. interpret and feel and understand what that feeling is, that it's not about that other person, that it may be about something triggered from your childhood inside you. Breathe through it, and instead of responding to through the cracked lens, try to do some healing breaths before you respond and ask for clarity. So creating that space to feel those dark emotions, not just pushing them down, because pushing them down just creates more, right? Acknowledging that you have shame-based feelings and kind of letting the light into the cracks, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So therapy is also an option. I'm not a huge fan of the talk therapy, but I think cognitive behavioral, always having a trusted loved one to bounce things off of. There's a lot of really good online resources also. I'm a huge fan of meditation and daily affirmations. Do you do these, Greg?
Not really. I mean, I think I am constantly affirming, but I don't make it a conscious effort, you know, sort of reinforcing, am I doing the right thing? Yes, I am. So let's keep going. But I don't make it organized.
Affirmations are huge. Well, post-it notes around the house. My body is beautiful. I'm famous for printing up things online and posting them all over my kids' walls and in the bathrooms until they sort of fall apart.
Just like wallpaper in place? Okay.
Life is magical. Everything's a miracle. Notice something beautiful today. Every cell in your body is perfect.
That kind of,
all these things.
That loses a bit of meaning for me simply because if someone told me that, it'd be different. You know, then I hear their voice. But just seeing it posted somewhere, it's like the memes. I see these memes. It's like, are you reading it? Are you acting on it? Or are you just posting it to make yourself feel better and show other people that, I guess, virtue signaling is the term for it.
Well,
you know, why
so here
are you doing
we go.
It?
I'm gonna do a meditation, an affirmation meditation, and I'm going to know that this is a message I'm telling myself. I'm going to believe it because I'm going to integrate it during my meditation. Then I will write it on a post-it note and post it around the house. Now it's not some random person. I'm reminding myself. I'm getting a louder voice of positivity than the negative voice that I've heard as a child or that I became a habit, the negative thoughts in my head that became a habit. I'm going to counteract them by trying to constantly feel positive thoughts. I want those positive thoughts to be louder. And so the post-it affirmations are just a reminder of what you want to start recreating in your head, which is the positive records, right?
Mm-hmm.
The loop. Yeah, and that works. And it begins to change the way you think about yourself and begins to change the thoughts, which then change your habits and behaviors in your life. Real stuff.
No, I believe
it. So my body is beautiful. I love my curves. I have ample, strong hips. My legs are strong and muscular. So instead of the voices that women hear in their head, like, why are my thighs so fat? Gosh, I wish I didn't have this big gut. Why is my ass so big? Instead, we're changing those thoughts. Strong muscular legs, ample feminine bottom, you know, things like that. So,
I love a guy said it to a woman in the same way. I love your curves. I love your muscular thighs. You know,
yeah, I love that.
And they put a little accent into it. I love your curves. I love your thighs. You know, I mean,
that feels amazing.
Is that an affirmation? In other words, if you hear a guy's voice saying it, does that change your affirmation?
For me, it does, but I'm a verbal affirmation girl, and I'm very
audio.
And so for me, that feeds me. Now, you want to know your woman. Your woman might respond to that, and she might not, but I think women love to be seen and complimented, generally speaking. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, makes sense. One thing we should talk about, I'd love to get into a discussion of feminism. So like the denial, it's like, you know, men don't need to tell us what to do. We're fine. We're independent. We don't need men, you know, and then the guy says, yeah, you really look hot today. Oh, okay. Thanks. It's so funny. These little lies, these big lies are there.
There are lies and little girls are taught to be masculine in very overt and subtle ways. They're taught that masculine is good and feminine is bad. And I won't get into that on this show because I'm out of time, but
yeah. Next week.
It's
or some
not
week.
Surprising we have full grown women that don't know what they want and don't know who they really are and don't know what actually makes them happy in and out of relationship.
Yeah. So if shame is damaging, then try and do something about it because the only person that's hurting is you. You know, if you feel that shame, then, you know, you're not hurting anybody else. And that's probably the
Well,
you're
hurting your children, actually, if you haven't done your work.
Oh.
If you haven't done your work, you're hurting your children. And if you're in relationship with someone else, I guarantee you're hurting them also.
Yeah.
I hate to say that. I don't want to.
No, that makes
you,
sense.
But,
no disclaimers. Yeah. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Should we do it next week?
I love it, Greg. Always. Every week. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And any websites or
so
contact information yet, or you're still working on stuff?
My website's just about up. I'm going to go ahead and give it because it might be up today. And my Facebook's always a great place to connect too. I try to post interesting topics. I love the discussion. Dorothy Diana, there's a picture of me with my hands up kind of loving the world. It's going to be very clear it's me. So when you read the biography. And then my website is Yoni Yoon. And it's been down for months, but it might, it's either up today or very close to today. And that's Y-O-N-I-Y-U-N. Mm-hmm.
You have to tell me what that means sometimes. What does it mean? Or tell me now, or you have to go.
Well, yoni is the word for vulva, feminine genitals, and not just like the physical, but the energetic also. And yun is from a Chinese word meaning rhythm.
Now, Mitch, is that .com? Okay. You're probably going to get Marcus with his big one and a couple of other folks contacting you right away would be my guess.
My guess is it's not that big, and that's okay, too. There's a woman for everyone.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Thank you again. This has been fascinating. And the good news is we're attracting a lot of attention. We're getting certainly getting callers. For every caller, there's like, you know, a gazillion listeners who didn't call. And so the person that did
that's
call
wonderful.
In, try again next week. And, you know, like I say, we might have to start doing the live chat or find I have actually a couple of folks I'm working on for screening. We'll get to that fairly soon, I think we're going to have to, because when this hits the big time, you know, all kinds of folks calling in. It's going to be interesting. All right, Dorothy, another fascinating engagement. We'll talk next week.
Thank you so much once again. Have a great week, and I'm looking forward.
Oh, I always look forward to our chats. All right.
Bye-bye.
From addiction to achievement, that is the story of Mike Lindell. It started with MyPillow and now goes to MyCoffee. Action Radio is proud to be an affiliate of MyPillow. Our discount code is the same for all our product affiliates, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. MyPillow pillows are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Action Radio is guaranteed to be the most controversial show you will ever hear. Check out their products with our discount code at mypillow.com/WYL. That's mypillow.com/WYL. Or order now by calling 1-800-544-8939. That's 1-800-544-8939. Sleep well so you can wake up and hear Action Radio live. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engine. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take, that is Action Radio.
This is Greg Penglis with Founding Moments,
sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. For our first founding lesson, I want to start with the Declaration of Independence. Basic to any understanding of freedom and liberty are these words written by Thomas Jefferson. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You will notice there is no reference to race, color, age, nationality, ethnic group, religion, or any of the common leftist categories they use to divide us. David Azarad, in his article for the Heritage Foundation, titled What the Constitution Really Says About Race and Slavery, December 28, 2015, says that no such concepts as race exist in the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, or any founding document. Therefore, since our founding documents have no such concept as race, it's kind of stupid of the left to say that we are founded on racism. The truth, folks, is that they simply made it up to suit their agenda of national sabotage and destruction, so that you would learn to hate your country. We hold these truths to be self-evident. No case need be made. It's plainly obvious. All men, meaning all people, are created equal. Granted, your status once you've come into the world is different from everyone else's because we all have different backgrounds, families, cultures, wealth, education, etc. We have differences, vast differences, but we are created equal. The whole concept of liberty, freedom, and rights are all dependent on keeping God above government. When governments believe they are gods, they will dispense rights as they see fit. When people believe they are gods, they will feel entitled to everything you have. True freedom comes only from the understanding and maintenance in government through control by the people that our rights are unalienable, that they cannot be separated from us, ever, because they came from a power higher than government. That we the people, also being a higher power, realize and maintain control over government because all just powers of government come from the consent of the governed. How we give our consent is why I created Action Radio. I'll be back next week with another edition of Founding Moments, sponsored by the Santa Rosa Volunteers.
Yeah, it kind of cracks me up that the obscene, otherwise rude, disgusting callers all came in during our sex and sensuality report. So I guess we're attracting a certain crowd to that. Hopefully you're listening and taking all our wise words of wisdom in, but of course there's no guarantee based on the quality of the calls that we got. Anyway, back tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock, usual group. I don't know exactly. I've got like 3 or 4 different show topics in my mind at any time, but we'll see what happens. We'll see what we do. But 7 o'clock Central Time, 7 a.m. Central Time. And then we have Wednesday, same thing, 7 a.m. Central Time. Thursday is our World's Greatest Doctors panel. And Friday, we start the gun reports a little bit early. And so we will see you tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed.